Greetings, fellow nerds and geeks. Why don't you pull yourself up a chair, grab yourself a beverage, and prepare to enjoy a geek-tastic conversation. Welcome to the Geekeasy.
Welcome to the Geekeasy. I'm your host, Pixel Dan, and today we're going to talk about the Man of Steel film. Now, normally this podcast is going to be a little more probably toy collecting heavy, but we're going to talk about films from time to time. Of course, I like superhero movies and stuff like that, and every now and then when a big one comes out, just want to talk about it, especially with Man of Steel here. I've had a lot of people asking me, hey, Pixel Dan, what did you think of Man of Steel? I loved it. And I figured the best way to actually explain how I felt about this movie was to sit down and record it in podcast format. And I've got a few guests with me today who are going to have this discussion with me, because it's a lot more fun when we can actually flesh out a full discussion and not just have me talking to the microphone by myself. So, my first guest on the show is a very good personal friend of mine. He is also a huge Superman fan and was pretty much excited about this movie going into it. So it's going to be interesting to see what he thought of it. I'd like to welcome Jonathan to the show. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And my second guest today is another good friend of mine who also enjoys the comic book movie, the comic book film, and even has a little special connection to this particular film. So I'd like to welcome Ryan to the show.
What up? Want to give a shout out to all my geek peeps out there.
All your geek peeps out there. All right. So before we get into discussing the actual movie, let's go ahead and just get a little bit of personal backstory on the two of you here. Jonathan, I mentioned real quick that you are a big Superman fan. Mm-hmm. He's your favorite comic book hero?
Him and Spider-Man.
Him and Spider-Man?
Yeah.
I know you actually did enjoy the previous Superman film, Superman Returns.
Yeah, and I love Returns.
Loved Returns. And that's one that actually got quite a bit of hate, actually. A lot of people disliked that movie.
You know, I truly believe I remember when that movie came out, everybody being semi-excited about it at the very least. And then it's one of those things where it kind of fell off the earth for a couple of years.
Right.
And then in retrospect, everybody just talks about how much they hated it and how boring it was. And, I mean, it had its problems and its slow issues, and that's fine. But it really, I think people took it as, it's a weird mix of an homage and a follow-up to the old Donner films,
right,
which I absolutely adore. I mean, those came out just technically pre-childhood. I was mm-hmm. born in 79, and I think the first one came out in 77.
Right.
Or 70, 78, somewhere right around there. So, but that was right through my youth, and through my entire youth, the only superhero movie I had was Dick Donner's Superman movies.
Right.
They were fantastic.
Those were pretty much the beginning of the superhero movie genre.
Right. And that's what I think people didn't really, you know, a lot of people either forgot or didn't embrace about Returns was, like, it's not a reboot, it's not doing its own thing, it's not even technically an homage, it pretty much is a direct sequel to those.
Right.
Know? Like, Brandon Routh wasn't playing Superman, he was playing Christopher Reeve's Superman.
Right. You
know? Kevin Spacey was playing Gene Hackman's Luther.
Right.
And given all that to thing, I mean, it was its own thing, I loved it, I would have enjoyed seeing a franchise out of it, but it, you know, it got its one standalone, but I thought it was absolutely perfect for what it was going for.
Mm-hmm.
People just didn't seem to embrace what it was going for after a while.
Right. So my thing with Superman Returns, first of all, I didn't dislike Superman Returns. I didn't love it either. And honestly, I think the biggest flaw is the fact that it was a Superman movie, because admittedly, I've never been that big of a Superman fan. And sometimes things just randomly fall off my shelves behind me. I am not that big of a Superman fan. I don't hate Superman, but he's never been a comic hero that's really been that intriguing to me. Plus, I've always been more of a Marvel guy than a DC guy. I do enjoy Batman, but I'm a big Spider-Man fan. Characters like that. Wolverine, I've always been a huge X-Men fan. And the problem that I always felt that the Superman movies had is they didn't have enough super-powered battles for me. I was really hoping to see some more of that kind of stuff with Superman Returns. And I did enjoy things like the plane scene was awesome,
mm-hmm.
you know, or watching that bullet bounce off his eyeball was really cool. But I want to see Superman, you know, duking it out with guys like Brainiac or even Doomsday in a movie. I just want to see a big superpowered fight. So that's one of the things I was really looking forward to with Man of Steel coming out. And I think a lot of people kind of were in that same position as me. A lot of people wanted to see more action, more fighting.
Yeah, that's definitely the big complaint that everybody has always had about any of that stuff.
Is right.
He's not throwing enough punches. There's not enough full-out action. It's a hard thing to do in a Superman movie. Not to get too far into our discussion, but once you start getting into that big, heavy action stuff, you run into these problems of, you know, well, what's too much? How much is enough? How do you do this action, you know, of these basically gods,
right,
without it being overdone? And so right, a lot of, you know, and there's just not a lot of threats to Superman. So a lot of times, true, apparently the answer is he'll just lift really, really heavy stuff.
You know, right,
and
right,
that'll be the climax, you know. And so I get how that's a problem for, mm-hmm, you know, for a lot of, you know, standard moviegoers. I don't know if that sounds too cocky or
yeah,
not. I'm not trying to, like, elevate myself
the
above
general public.
But yeah, you know, the general public who doesn't really give, you know, much of a care about, you know, some of the, you know, the backgrounds of the characters and just wants to see some general action, it's hard to figure out exactly how to do that. So you got to find a little bit better of a mix.
Right.
And we'll talk about my thoughts on how Man of Steel did that.
Absolutely.
Shortly.
Absolutely. What's your position on all that, Ryan? Like, with Superman Returns and everything?
Well, I always loved the first two, obviously, of the Donner. And it wasn't until when they put out the big, huge box set that I even knew that Donner was doing the second one, too. And then I got to see his version of it.
Right.
It makes way more sense, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
I remember, because I loved Superman Returns, too. It wasn't my favorite, but it still was fantastic. And I remember when I was reading something about Bryan Singer, it was a long time ago, and everybody's talking about how it was a big failure. And I was like, no, they pretty much hit it on the nail, because he went to the studio and said, this is my dream for making Superman Returns. They were like, they came to him because he was supposed to do X-Men 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pulled him off that project.
Right.
And
right,
like, you're the one who can make this happen. And he pitched his idea, and he's like, I just love Donner. I want to make a sequel to Superman 2.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, go ahead and do it. And that's exactly what he did.
That's what he did.
And
he killed
it. So if anybody wants to sit there and point fingers, it's more of a WB just not knowing what they wanted to do.
Right.
But this was all, still Marvel hadn't come along yet. So, it was still one of the best superhero movies for its time, for that era.
Yeah, right, because it didn't, so, remember, yeah, it was
yeah,
2 years before Iron Man.
Yeah, so that's before everything rolls up. And it's going to be one of those movies where they're going to look back and they're going to watch it and be like, you know what, Superman Returns was good. I don't know why. It seems like people read a couple articles and they're like, yeah, you're right, it's awful. Somehow they just jump on the wagon.
Yeah.
And it just snowballs.
Mm-hmm.
But people just, people loved it at the time when it came out. Made money.
Right, right. Yeah, uh-huh. It's really weird. I agree. I agree. It's weird how that happens. And then you also brought up the Marvel stuff, and that's a great point, because we are going to kind of, we'll get into some of that too, and I think that also had an impact on why Man of Steel became the movie that it was. Obviously, you know, Iron Man came out and it was just, it blew everybody away, us mm-hmm. including. I mean, we had no idea that an Iron Man movie could be as good as it was, and then, you know, Marvel starts doing all these other movies, and
they had no idea what they were doing.
Right,
that's
right.
Probably the second biggest surprise in comic book cinematic history.
Exactly. Was the other one Thor?
Oh, absolutely. There was no reason anyone ever should have been able to make an entertaining Thor movie, and they knocked it out of the park.
Right, yeah, right, absolutely. So Marvel's on a roll, and they're hitting out, you know, home runs with all these movies. They do Avengers. It's just like, it makes tons of money. It's everybody's favorite comic book movie. So now DC is kind of finally starting to, like, wait. Or Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers owns DC stuff. So they're starting to go, maybe we should have been on board with this whole Justice League thing a long time ago. Because they've been trying to do this for how long? How many times have they almost made a Justice League movie and then just scrapped it?
Right.
And now all of a sudden Marvel's just nailing
it. When was the writer strike? Was that like 07, somewhere around there. So there was supposed to be a Justice League movie right around then that got scrapped.
But that was completely, but you still had things separate. Because the thing was, because the Batman came out in what, 05?
Batman
Begins.
And that's the thing too, is they had no idea that was going to be what it was.
Yeah.
They
right.
just took a chance on
yep.
that. And that turned into something. Like, they didn't have a plan going and being like, okay, we're going to do these Batman movies. Like, no, they just got lucky and struck it. I mean, we could say the same thing with Marvel, but it always looked like Marvel had a game plan, being like, okay, we're going to release this, and then we're going to keep on.
You know.
And with having Kevin Feige producing it and being able to go every picture on Marvel and having the central idea of being like, I'm not directing, but I'm keeping you on the track of what we want to do with this whole thing.
Right.
And what we were talking about the other day, when it comes to these movies, sometimes it does come, and it doesn't upset me, but I look at budgets and I'm like, they probably spent $200 to $250 million on Superman, which mm-hmm. you need to, but not really.
Right.
You could do that movie for 100, 120. And I think that they get too deep into that where it's just like, here's a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
Make it.
And think about.
And they don't build correctly.
Right.
Do it like, and we're going to keep on saying this, but do the Marvel. It's almost like Marvel is setting. Yeah.
You know what? Copy it, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're setting it.
Don't bring pride into it. Don't think you have to do anything different to outdo it. Copy that exact model.
It's a
look at what they're doing. Yeah. They're doing cheap movies. Mm-hmm. They're getting, you know, semi-name actors and no-name directors for the most part, or you know, guys who don't do a lot of work or whatever, but passion guys.
Yeah.
And they're bringing them in, and they're you know, they're conceptualizing one movie at a time while putting elements that are going to build towards something else,
right.
And they're knocking every one of them out. There's not a bad movie in that bunch, and it doesn't look like there's a bad movie coming out of it anytime soon.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if there's anybody listening to us right now that's just, you know, doing the, oh, well, they're just Marvel fanboys. But let me tell you something. Marvel has done something that I have always wanted to see in a superhero movie. John and I have had these conversations dating all the way back to, like, the Spider-Man movies, the Raimi Spider-Man movies. I've always wanted to see an open world where all these characters exist in the same world. Yeah. I never thought that there was any reason that shouldn't happen. That happens in our comic books.
Yep.
You know, we read our comic books, there's always references to other characters, companies, storylines. You know, even if it's not centralized on that character meeting up with other characters, there's always nods to the things that are going on in the same universe. Mm-hmm. And when Marvel finally started doing that, it was just like, this is what I've been waiting for in a comic book movie.
Yeah.
This is what I want to see. Yeah. So I want to see DC do the same thing.
Absolutely.
You know, DC's got a great universe as well with a lot of really awesome characters. And another thing that we always talk about is how good DC's animated movies are. And they're not afraid to throw all these characters in the same universe.
Yep.
If we can get that to translate into a feature film, that would be gold.
Yeah.
Just like what Marvel's doing.
All of the DCU animated stuff is absolute gold.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, or, you know, 100% of everything I've seen of it anyway.
Right,
like, I haven't seen a single thing where I went, well, they really, you know, put half-butt effort into that one. You know, all of it is fanboy friendly, it's general public friendly, it's just solid storytelling and animation and action and everything all the way through. But then when they do the live action stuff, they just put so much focus onto, well, we gotta go big, you know, we gotta have a huge budget, we gotta have names involved, and we gotta do, you know, this and that, and we gotta flush out the cast, and we gotta put Ryan Reynolds in our Green Lantern movie, and we gotta, you know, put X person, you know, anywhere we can, whatever, and they just add all this extra stuff into it, and they lose complete sight of the core of what they're trying to make.
Yeah.
And that's not a Marvel versus DC thing. It's just one person doing it right and one person doing it wrong, you know?
That's the thing. Yeah. They think they can get in some big, just part with the big names and bring those people in, and they're like, okay, well, this can sell our movie. It's like, no, let the movie sell the movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? That's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
Just
right.
build around that. And
all right. So now that we've got that kind of, we're getting ready to head into the actual review. But before we start our discussion, we have some fun things that I did want to mention now that we're going to get into further later on in the show here. I did mention at the very beginning that Ryan has a fun connection to Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that you actually worked around the filming of this, correct?
I did. I assisted one of the actors. I will say that working on this movie is one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Got me into a new position in the film industry and got me a little bit closer. Had discussions with people about other things, and it was amazing. It's incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're going to touch on that more at the end. But another reason I wanted to bring that up now is because that also helped Jonathan out. Because you got to be an extra in the film, right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, thanks to Ryan.
Right.
One of the people he met along the way were some of the casting directors. So when they were just, you know, needed bodies and faces and people to come around, I got to take a couple hours drive and go sit there. And this was, what, September, I think?
Yeah, mid-September.
Of 2011. Mm-hmm. So almost 2 years ago. And we were at Union Station in Chicago. They were filming the big final battle scene between Zod and Superman there.
Right.
And I got to be, this was before any of the pictures were released and nobody had seen the suits or whatever. And I got to stand there in Union Station, and I look by at one point, and some giant in a robe is walking by. I'm like, well, that seems kind of weird. Oh, well, that's Michael Shannon. And there's Superman right in front of him, Henry Cavill. And, you know, they get up front, they take those robes off, and they've got their, you know, their suits on. They put, they put Henry's cape on, and I'm standing in the room going, well, that's Superman. That's definitely Superman. If I ever thought about being in the room with Superman, that's exactly who I imagined it would look like right there.
Oh, you know? That's
it
cool.
It was just a very neat experience to be able to see all that stuff, kind of like firsthand.
Oh, yeah.
In person, and so much, you know, longer before everything started coming out about it.
Right.
You know? So
very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're going to touch more on that stuff a little bit more at the end of the show, so we can have some fun discussions about what that was all like. But now it's time to go ahead and start discussing the Man of Steel film itself. Before we get into actually discussing this, I do want to give a warning to everybody that this is going to be a very spoiler-heavy podcast. If you have not seen the film yet and you do not want to be spoiled, go ahead and just turn this off. You don't want to listen to this. We are going to go through this in detail and pretty much pick it apart completely. So you're not going to want to listen if you don't want to be spoiled. Another thing that I really just kind of want to put out there, guys, everything that we're saying here, it's our personal opinions. I know lots of people love this movie. Maybe you're not going to agree with the things that we're talking about. And I just want to say, that's totally cool, guys. We want you to love what you love. We're glad that you enjoy it. Don't get mad at us if our opinion's a little different than yours. If you're going to argue with us, that's cool. We're not going to argue back. Go ahead and do your thing.
No follow-up later.
Yeah. We're just going to have a conversation about the things we liked and didn't like, and hopefully you guys enjoy listening to it.
And I think you're kind of foreshadowing just a little bit that we maybe weren't quite as thrilled as some people were.
I know.
Man of Steel. But the fact of the matter, too, is, like, I mean, for the most part, I don't think any of us, you know, really hated it either.
No.
So there's a lot of people on both ends of the spectrum who are absolutely in love for whatever reason, and the people who absolutely hate it for whatever reason. And like Dan said, if that's your opinion, that's your opinion. That's fine. But we're just kind of going to, you know, we've got a long history with watching these movies and talking about them. So we just want to do it on microphone.
Right, exactly. Like, this right here is a pretty much a normal conversation we have after we see every one of these movies. So this is really cool. It's just one of those things where, like he said, that's pretty much a foreshadowing right there of exactly what we're going to get into. So, we didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. I'm the same as you. I definitely did not hate this movie, and I think that's a great way to start this whole conversation. We didn't hate this movie. We just didn't really love this movie.
And that's the thing. When I start talking about it, it sounds like I don't like it much at all.
Right.
Which isn't true. It's just the fact that the stuff that stood out to me was the stuff that they did wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. All right, so let's go ahead and kick this off. We're going to start right off with the opening sequence to the film. This, of course, is the opening scene where we get to see the planet Krypton. We get this whole new kind of look for the planet of Krypton. So let's go ahead and start there. What did you think of just the look of the planet, the environment, the creatures that we saw, all that crazy stuff?
I thought it looked like Pandora.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Like, Avatar's huge. Let's put it in our movie.
I was thinking more Episode 2 Star Wars.
The
battle planet with the Wookiees.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought.
Okay.
Especially when Jarrell jumps on that giant flying thing. I was like, that's Obi-Wan jumping on this thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
We'd rip that off.
See, that's just, that's not the way I picture Krypton in my head. I mean, I see Krypton as an advanced, I mean, and to be fair, they were advanced, but I see it more as like this futuristic city that's not unlike our cities, just much more scientific and futuristic.
Yeah.
And this looked like an animal planet.
Well,
you know,
that was the thing that struck me about it, is because I was thinking, well, I mean, they're such an advanced civilization, and it looks like they're just living in caves, but they have cool toys.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of weird.
They're like mud huts that they look like they've carved out. Mm-hmm. And even in the opening scene when she's giving birth, and it's literally just a weird shape. It's like, number one is, for such advance, where's like the furniture around everywhere? I know these like nitpicking things, but I like how they're so much like us, yet it's like she's sitting on a pile of dirt giving birth. I'm like,
I think this was their way of really just trying to show that they're aliens. I think that's what they were going for.
And none of that stuff actually bothered me.
I'm not gonna
hold
that
stuff to nitpick.
You.
I actually really liked the first 20 minutes though.
Me too.
Like,
honestly, this is my favorite part of the whole movie. Just getting to see all this stuff. I really liked the way that they fleshed out this whole, because we all know the story. Krypton's gonna blow up. Jor-El sends Cal off so that he can keep the Krypton name alive. He can live his life on a different planet while everybody else is going to die. We know the story. This kind of fleshed it out a little bit where we got to see, we got to learn some things, like how Kal-El was the first natural birth on Krypton.
Which I thought was really cool.
In centuries. Yeah, which I did find out afterwards actually has been referenced in the comics.
Oh,
so that
really?
Is taken from a specific story in the comic books. That's not something they made up for the movie like I thought it was.
Yeah, I thought it was too.
Which is, so that's pretty cool. And I did like that either way. I thought that was an interesting concept. Mm-hmm. Very Matrix-y.
It started out great. With that concept. I wasn't very thrilled. I thought they could have done more with it or explained it more.
Yeah.
And had it more meaning. But
they just kind of present it and then that's kind of it.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Who knows? A big deal.
But that's another thing too.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And who knows when they might reference it more later on in the other movies.
That's right. Yeah, this maybe isn't the end of it. And that's another thing I just keep trying to tell myself, and we're going to do this through the whole podcast, I think. I keep saying, well, this was just an introduction to this movie series.
Right.
Maybe they'll touch on some of this other stuff and fix it in other movies. So, I'm really trying to have an open mind. Mm-hmm. Really trying. Mm-hmm. So we learn that Jor-El is presenting himself to this council on Krypton, basically trying to say, guys, this planet's going to blow. I'm a scientist. I know these things. We've used up all the natural resources. This planet's not going to make it anymore. I suggest we go to some of these outposts that we've sent to all these other planets over the years. Because apparently Krypton at one point was all about traveling the stars, finding other planets, and then they just abandoned that at some point. And Jor-El's wanting to bring that whole concept back. He's like, let's go to these other planets because this planet's blowing up. And we're laughing.
No,
so.
I have more thoughts.
Oh, okay.
That's why. What is a new freshman? Well, that's the whole point. Like, I don't want to skip ahead, but he explains later to Cal when Clark's on Earth, you know, it's like, hey, I couldn't come with you because, you know, I'm a product of what was bad about Krypton. Yet, Jor-El's going to the council saying, we need to survive. We need to go somewhere else and live.
It's just like,
well, you just kind of contradict yourself. I know it's nitpicking stuff.
Yeah.
But it's almost like Jor-El would be like, okay with it.
Yeah.
Sending his son away to be like, you're going to become
what I didn't understand is that with all those outposts they set up, and it's another thing they get into a little bit later, but we're going spoiler heavy anyway. So
yeah, might as well just
assuming everyone's seen the movie.
Yep.
And
yep.
we're just reminding you of different parts,
yep.
you know?
Yep.
When they start getting into that stuff and Zod's going to all, you know, the different outposts looking for him, like, why did every single one of those just wash up and die?
No.
You know, they had those world engines and they were supposed to be retrofitting planets and spaces they could live, yet every colony lost contact with the homeworld and just died centuries ago.
And that's Jor-El explains it kind of being like they abandoned them. But then you see it later, and it's like, there's kind of people
everywhere.
Still there. But
then
we don't know the world. Like I said, the world engine, it might just work for a certain amount of time. Then you got to redo it.
Or maybe Krypton did just close them off completely.
True.
And I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I guess that maybe that's
maybe they killed those people.
Yeah,
we don't know.
And it's that's not something that upset me about the movie. It's just something that I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah,
maybe other people get it.
Yeah,
and I just missed something, but I don't get it.
Yeah. So at this point, Zod bursts in with the Krypton military.
And apparently there's a whole bunch of just empty worlds around, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because they make it seem like they're peacekeeping people all the time. And they have no problem.
World machines turn worlds into Krypton.
But apparently a lot of empty worlds out there.
Right.
Zod's got to have this one.
Oh, yeah. All right. So Zod breaks in because he's decided that it's his job to protect Krypton. And this is where we learn that all the Kryptonians are bred for specific purposes. This is really kind of the beginning of it.
Yeah,
you know?
which was also super cool.
So, like, you are born and bred to be, you know, a military person or a scientist or on the council that governs over Krypton.
Or a ninja scientist. If you're
exactly. Exactly.
They didn't create their generals with better enough combat because, my God, does Zod get his ass kicked this whole entire movie?
So Zod breaks in.
They did not even try.
Yeah. He spends the entire movie getting beaten up by a scientist and a farmer.
Always being rescued.
So Zod decides that he's going to take over Krypton because he's what's best for the planet. He can tell something's going on with it too, but he's going to save it. Mm-hmm. He and Zor-El tries to talk sense into him. There's no saving it. It's going to blow up right now. Zod basically says, "Look, you follow me or you're against me," basically. And that kind of leads to this whole Zod's on trying to take over. Jor-El runs back, knows that this is the time to. Oh, this is where he goes and gets the, what is it, the DNA?
The Codex.
Right, so we get a glimpse of where all the baby Kryptonians are kind of born and bred and everything. And there apparently there's this Codex.
Yeah, which, why? Yeah. Why does he need to give that? I get it, like, getting it away from Zod, mm-hmm. but why give it to Superman?
Just to be like, it's in you. I'm not even 100% sure why he needs to get it away from Zod. What's Zod gonna do?
Well, he thinks he's gonna go make a whole bunch of army people and go take over. But like, yeah, where's he gonna go?
Gonna explode.
That's what I meant. That's
no one's willing to leave.
I know. And like I said, it's nitpicking once again, and that's a lot of this. But it just doesn't make sense. You're right. The planet is going to explode. What is he gonna do? Build an army within? A couple days before it explodes? Right.
Well, it's almost one of those things where I wonder if Zod's just in denial. You know, like, he's going to protect Krypton. It's not going to blow up. I'm going to save it. It's going to be fine. Could, you know, it's just, I think it's that kind of thing. And Jor-El, being the scientist, is like, look, there's nothing we can do. Yeah. This planet's going to blow. Yeah. You've got to listen to me. So he goes and he gets the Codex. He takes it back. And this is where they inject the Codex into Kal, basically. Mm-hmm. They put it inside of Kal-El. And at this point, this is where Zod bursts in with his army. He's demanding the Codex. He's telling Jor-El, don't do it. Don't send Kal off to another planet or whatever. We need that Codex. And Jor-El doesn't listen. They send it off. Zod kills Jor-El. Dun, dun, dun. After we did get to see Jor-El's cool ninja moves first, but Zod got him here. Yeah. Zod kills
him. Zod gets him because he's looking up in the sky and not paying attention for a second.
Sucker stabs him. And kind of looks like he feels a little bit of remorse for doing it, too, afterwards.
Well,
they did, I think,
a decent job of setting him up as...
Yeah.
I don't know if friends is the right word.
At some point, they were.
Yeah, exactly.
They were at least respective colleagues.
That's always... Anytime they come out with one of these stories, it's always, you know, they were some level of friendly.
Friends become enemies.
Right.
Enemies
and they do that
friends.
Even in this one where, I mean, Zod comes in, guns a-blazing, into that council, and Jor-El's not happy about it, but Zod even comes right up to him and is like, you know, you're right. We all know you're right. There's something we got to do. The last thing I want is for us to be enemies. You know, let's team up and do this my way.
Yeah.
You know, and Jor-El's just like, well, let's not team up. Let's just do it my way. You know, and then that's where the conflict seems to come in.
Right.
But I think they did an okay job of at least setting up that relationship and that remorse. And Zod's not just a stone killer. He is a protector of his people.
Right.
You know, if Jor-El is an asset to that, then, you know, he's a Kryptonian. That's what he's there to do is protect people like him. It's just when he feels he has to make these actions. So I think there was, some remorse there
for
that.
And this is where the character development stops. Mm-hmm. With these two characters.
this is the end.
It continues, obviously, with Zod throughout the whole movie, because he's in the movie.
Yeah.
And even Jor-El a little bit, even though he's a ghost.
Jor-El gets still, more character development.
He gets more character development.
I was going to say, So at this point, the good guys, I guess, on the Krypton military have surrounded Zod's forces. They sentence him and his men to the Phantom Zone. So this is a cool nod to the old films, I guess. They're going to send them off to the Phantom Zone, but instead of it just being like this big piece of glass that floats through the universe.
Awesome.
Yeah. Now they're, you know, encasing them in like these crazy little rockets, and they're shooting them up into the ship, and then the ship just gets sucked into like this
black
other dimension, this black hole, which is the Phantom Zone, I guess.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah,
and I didn't even like how it opened up and it was like a square. So it was kind of still like the same thing and they went
cool
in and then it closed.
They don't want to do everything.
It's a reboot. But I thought that was still a fun nod.
Yeah.
They still sent Zod and his troops to the Phantom Zone. Very cool. And then we get to see Kal-El's ship heading towards Earth. Krypton goes kaboom. That's the end of it. So, and then we get the beginning credits, 20 minutes into the movie.
Yeah. Right. I like the little cut right before the ship's about to crash, and then it just cuts to that boat in the water, the wave crashing, you know? And then that's when I kind of stopped liking it.
more problems came
So we were a little nitpicky about that opening scene, but I think... it's overall, fair to say that we really enjoyed the opening scene.
I like the opening a lot.
Like, I was really excited while watching it because I'm like, this is getting good. I'm really excited to see where this is going to go.
Yeah, like, if this is just the build, I can't wait to see the payoff.
Yeah, exactly. So then we get to the scene on the boat. And I feel exactly the same way you do about this scene. It kind of just made me fall a little bit after that big rise and that high I was feeling after the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
We get this scene where it's a fully grown Clark, complete with beard. He's working on a fishing boat, I guess, out in the middle of the ocean. There's a storm happening. He's being treated like crap because he's just some dude working on a boat. I don't know why he's doing this. I have no idea why he's working
on
the boat.
He's grifting. He's searching the world, trying to find himself.
Yeah.
And that's one of those,
which they never really
explain. It's the flashback. Not fully, but you kind of gather some of it. It's when they start going to flashback mode. It's when it basically becomes Superman Begins.
Yeah, basically.
They try to take that Nolan route.
This is when Nolan steps in.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
When someone steps in and goes, we got to pretend Nolan's here.
Yeah.
So let's make it look like one of his movies.
Let's make it look.
Right.
So then there's this scene that rolls right into next, where there's this oil rig out in the ocean that is just on fire. It's falling apart. There's some guys that are trapped on it. Everybody's ready just to abandon it. They're just like, no way, those guys are dead. We're not even going to bother. So this is where Superman decides he's going to step in, or Clark at this point. So Clark gets himself over to that oil rig. Yep. There's this really cool scene where he runs inside like he's on fire, which is crazy because the place is on fire, so he's got fire on him. He gets the people outside.
And that door rips open and
and
flaming bearded Clark.
Flaming bearded shirtless Clark. Come with me if you want to live.
Not even trying to hide
his
face whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. Because
apparently they don't take yearbook photos in Smallville.
Well, I don't think any of the burning oil rig workers were going to pull out their iPhones.
Oh, okay. Well, apparently he doesn't have a Facebook page, all right?
So I actually really do like this scene, though. He gets everybody up on top. The helicopter sees them there, finally flies in to save him. Then a beam comes falling. We get to see Clark jump in front, catch the beam. It's actually a really cool, very heroic scene for Clark Kent.
It's really cool.
It shows some level of wanting to protect things, which again is where they kind of waste all of their stuff at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because this is 8 of the 11 humans that he cared about in this movie.
That's true.
Yeah. Right there.
Exactly.
And that's about accurate.
I love how a falling beam is the one thing that he has to yell and scream about to lift, because there's nothing heavier than that beam for Clark Kent.
Oh,
and the fact that it knocks him out into the ocean, I didn't know. Apparently Zod's punches at the end weren't strong enough, but a beam can toss him in the ocean and he gets knocked out for a bit. I just find that one interesting.
So the helicopter flies off with everybody but Clark, because he falls down with the rubble of the oil tanker.
No one's like, hey, there's a guy who saved us. Maybe we should stick around and try to find him. Nope, he's dead. Get him out of here.
They're out.
Because this helicopter can't stay out here much longer.
And this is where we start falling into the flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we realize that this whole kind of build up right here is going to jump back and forth between kid Clark and adult Clark. So we kind of start getting that whole semblance of he's finding himself thing. Mm-hmm. We see scenes of Clark in school. And
that was awesome too.
which is a really cool scene, because he's sitting in school. He's a very young kid. He's having a hard time controlling all the powers he has. He's seeing things in X-ray vision. He's hearing everything amplified because of his super hearing. And it's just driving him crazy. He doesn't understand. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't understand what's going on. And he freaks out. He runs out of the room. We have this really great scene where everybody kind of treats him as an outcast, and then Ma Kent comes and, you know, talks him out and kind of basically kind of gives you the idea that she helped him hone his abilities.
And how great was Diane Lane?
Yeah, very good.
This was by far the best flashback scene, and the only scene where you actually see a little bit of tenderness shown towards Clark, because other than that, apparently everybody hated this person. Just
I was
gonna
say,
that kid and said, that's the one.
I do feel like Ma Kent was a little nicer than Pa Kent was. You know?
And that's all the stuff you want to see about him growing up on the farm, and whatever itineration you come through of, you know, what is ultimately going to happen to Jonathan and what his life was like, and, you know, Like, they don't, you know, they kind of show Lana in one scene, sort of, but they pretty much completely ignore, you know, that whole aspect of it. And that's fine. But the one thing you really want to see is the effect that his Earth parents have on him. Because that's what makes him, you know, protector instead of destroyer.
Exactly.
You know,
yes.
And so you really get this very cool opening where I think it's one of the more powerful scenes in the movie with, like you said, Ma Kent just comes in and is like, you know, look, you focus, you concentrate on me, because she doesn't understand what's going on with any of this stuff either.
Right.
It's not like she's got an instruction book.
Exactly.
You know, she just knows that the kid is not of this world. She has seen that he can do things he shouldn't be able to do, you know, and so she's just trying her best to just raise this boy and teach him, you know, to train himself, to care about things, to become a good man, all these things he's supposed to do. And you see all of that encapsulated in this few second scene where she just comes in and has the answer and calms him down, and it's really, really cool, you know, how they go through that.
Right. Right. So then we kind of, we start flashing back and forth between his adult life and his child life. And one of the next scenes we see of his adult life is him coming out of the water onto land. He walks through somebody's backyard, decides it's a good day. There's all these clothes on this clothesline. Maybe I should steal these so that I have a shirt on. Which, I don't know. I'm going to be nitpicky about that. That doesn't seem like a very Superman thing to do. I'm just going to snatch these people's clothes. Whatever. But then he goes, and I guess he gets himself a job at a bar that's in this little town.
Well, first they do the other flashback.
Oh, that's right.
The bus.
The bus flashback is first.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
so we flash back to the bus.
Yeah.
There's a
they
bus
do some
accident.
Quick flashbacks. Too.
They do. They go back. Yeah, really quick. So this is a scene of a Smallville bus. Obviously, we get a shot of Lana Lang as a little kid. We get Pete Rose. What's his name?
Pete Ross.
Pete Rose.
That guy. Yep.
Kind of look like Pete Rose. I guess.
Pete Ross.
Bit.
We get Pete,
haircut,
Pete Ross as a little
kid.
Yep. He's mean. He's a jerk to Clark right here in this scene. And then there's a bus accident. The bus falls over the bridge and it lands in the water. And then we get to see. I would assume this is probably Clark's first big heroic thing that he did.
Well, they mention afterwards that other
he's
people
done
have seen
some
him do stuff,
but nothing like that.
Yeah, I think this is.
Yeah,
so
this,
I would.
I'm sure this is by far the biggest.
Yeah. So he uses his strength and he pushes the bus out of the water. He saves the whole busload of kids. He goes back in. He saves the drowning Pete, who then becomes his best friend.
Right,
we assume after that.
Yeah.
So there's that whole scene, and that I liked this scene too. But then the scene after this is where we get...
Yeah, I liked it up until John.
Yeah. So then we get the scene where Pete and his mom are at the Kent's house, and his mom is just going crazy because her son's alive. She's mad about it.
So upset.
She wasn't mad. She was just freaking out.
How dare your boy save
these
children?
She wasn't angry that he had done it. She was just like, hey, what's up with your kid? And the Kents are like, nothing, just a kid. And they're like, no. This is a miracle, you know?
Yeah. So Clark, he's obviously upset about this whole thing because he doesn't understand why she's over there and you know, basically interviewing his parents about stuff. And he's scared about what happened that day. And he thought he did something really good, and he doesn't understand why people are scared of that. So this is where we get the conversation with Paul Kent talking to him and basically telling him that, you know, people, you can't let people know who you are. Because we can't handle that. Humans can't handle that. We are going to freak out if we know that there's life outside of Earth.
Yeah.
And that's basically the speech he gives him.
And it's very un-Jonathan Kent.
Yes.
It's very, not, I mean, like I said about his parents, they're the ones who teach him all his Earth values, and they're the reason he becomes this protector that he becomes. And Jonathan Kent starts it right here and just takes this hard line the whole movie of, you know, you need to hide. No matter what
you
the circumstance,
to hide, even if people die,
and he even says right there, "Well, should I let all these kids die?" Well, maybe.
Yeah, and like, I just didn't like that. I did not like that at all. I did not
just
like
to
that
save.
Because that's just that's not
it's
Superman.
A very selfish thing to say.
That's
it's basically saying, "I need you on this farm to do all this work." I don't care if a busload of kids.
Yeah,
I
guess,
can't have the government
you
come
keep
and get
you. Telling
you.
This kid how great he's going to be someday. Well, how's he going to be that if he can never do anything and learn from these? You know, like shouldn't your excuse be? Well, maybe try to be a little more discreet about
exactly.
Things.
That's what
not
it should have been.
Just don't do anything.
Yeah.
Hide from everyone.
Because not even that. Even in the bus scene, like nobody sees him push that bus out. They just see him
Lana sees him outside of the bus. Yeah. By no means did anybody see. And then he goes and says, Pete, wow, as if somebody can't jump into the water.
Well,
So nothing's not unexplained.
And if he was a properly trained little kid with these crazy powers, he'd know to push the bus up and then duck under it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
but I'm fine. I'm even fine with that because it just shows that, okay, and it just leads us into the scene. Some of these scenes, it's like it's just leading into it, but it's the discussion with Pa Kent where you just scratch your head being like, ugh.
I
don't know any dad who would ever say that.
I was going to say, it feels like he's sending very mixed signals because he does say a lot of things about, you know, you could be great one day, that kind of thing.
Right.
But then he goes right back to hammering on the, but don't do anything. Yeah. Don't do anything out of the ordinary. That's bad stuff. And it's like, how can he one day do great things with his powers if you're telling him just not to use his powers at all? And I don't like that at all. And I especially didn't like when he said that maybe he should have just let the kids die.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing he could have possibly said in that scene, I think.
Yeah, it was anti-Jonathan Kent.
Now, the one thing I did like about that scene is when he took him down to show him the ship and told him, you've got another dad out there. He's probably looking for you. And then Clark kind of said that, you know, the little sad thing about, like, you know, but I want you to be my dad. And he kind of, Jonathan did, well, I am your dad. And that was a very cool little
moment.
Yeah, he
said, can I just keep pretending you're my dad?
Yeah.
He's like, well, I am your dad.
Yeah, and I liked that. Yeah. So that was a good way to end that scene. But, man,
thing that drove me crazy about Costner is every time he comes on, I'm like, man, he's great, too. But what a terribly written character he's portraying.
Yeah.
Because he's doing everything fantastic. It's just coming out of left field.
Yeah. Right. All right, so then we flash back to adult Clark. He's now working at this bar in this small town where he swiped those clothes. And we get this other scene where now we're playing on what Jonathan taught him as a kid, because we've got this scene where there's this bully in the bar. He's hitting on the chicks. He's just being a total jackass. And Clark goes over and says, hey, don't do that. And the guy stands up to him. And this scene's great, too, because he shoves him and he doesn't move. And I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I just thought the whole thing was hysterical because it's like this, you know, 6'4", you know, brick house of a man walks up and says, hey, stop abusing our waitresses. And this 5'7", 100, you know, 50 pounds soaking wet dude stands up and gets right in Clark's face.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Even if
what
he doesn't have even if you don't have superpowers, I'm not messing with that guy that looks like he has a Ricardo Montalban Star Trek II press the con chest plate.
Yeah.
It's like and then he goes to throw a beer can at his head after he just tried to punch him in the chest and probably broke a finger.
He punches him, reels back himself, visibly like struck by how hard Clark is, and then his next follow up is, I'll just throw a can at him. If I can't beat him, maybe aluminum.
Exactly. This'll show him.
Now, Clark does the right thing. He walks away.
Right.
Which he should have done regardless. You know, that's the right thing to do. But then we get this little scene outside the bar,
we got to get to where he overhears them talking about the ship.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
this
is where he overheard the military guys
the
that were in there,
guys,
right? Yeah. Talking about there being like a crash site or like a site.
Something
that something's big and it's buried under the ice and blah, 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 blah.
Sounds alien-y.
An
alien.
Yeah, so he's going to go check it out. But first, he's going to go and teach this guy a lesson by throwing his semi-truck up into a telephone pole. And while this was good for a little chuckle,
everybody
in the theater laughed at it. It is one of those things you have to nitpick again and go, was that very Superman-like? That's
how did he do that without getting noticed?
Yeah.
Except he never cared about getting noticed.
At this point.
And then all I think about, because I'm like, you know, that guy, he probably doesn't own that truck. Some trucking company owns that. He's just a driver.
Yeah.
So basically, some trucking company's insurance is going to go through the roof because Clark wanted to get a chuckle out of a couple people in the audience. Although he doesn't know anybody's in the audience going to laugh at this. Those things are things that I look at and I'm just like,
it's the things that make it an un-Superman.
Yes.
Movie, you know?
That's what goes on in
it's
Ryan's
like, hey,
mind.
This is a good laugh.
That guy's insurance is going to go up. You're a jerk.
He's a very practical.
The insurance company, they wanted to bring Superman in the real world. This is real.
That's true.
Insurance company
that's
is not going to
believe that my telephone pole, you know, went through my truck.
That's one point. It's kind of getting off the subject of the movie as we're going through it, but I like some terrible movies, and I dislike some pretty decent movies. And most of that is generally about, you know, like, you build a world, you advertise a world, you live in that world.
We're going to get in this.
If you want to make a big, flashy comic book movie that doesn't make any darn sense, but it's got fun explosions, I will sit there and enjoy it, even if it's pretty bad. I'm looking at you, Ghost Rider. but if you want to make a movie where you go, well, we're going to take this seriously, we're going to do the Batman thing and pretend that it's real life, and we're going to ground everything. We're going to take some of the flash and fun out of it, but we're going to make it dark and serious and thought-provoking, and it's going to be like, if Superman existed in this world, what would it be like? If that's what you're going to advertise to me, then that's the stuff I'm going to nitpick.
Yeah. You exactly.
Know? Yeah.
Hey, just because you show me an IHOP and a 7-Eleven doesn't mean, oh my gosh, this is happening outside my door. Yeah. He's wearing a Kansas City Royals shirt. He's one of me. No, he's not. Yeah. I get it. It's fake. It's phony.
Yeah.
I get it's not real. Yeah. So I don't need you to be exactly. like, oh, this is Superman in the real world. Being like, there is no Superman. Yep. So there is no real world. Mm-hmm. Build that universe.
Yeah. Exactly. I just.
That's the same. There's a lot of things I won't nitpick.
Make me believe in your universe.
But if you're going to tell me, you know, that we're going to do it a certain way, then I'm going to expect you to do it that way.
Yeah.
I just, I want to throw in right here that I hate that. I hate the whole grounding in reality concept for comic book movies.
Stupid.
Like, I enjoyed the first two Nolan Batman films fine, but I still don't like the whole grounding in reality thing. And I think, and here I am I'm going to throw this comparison out now, and I know it's going to make people mad. Avengers proved that you don't have to ground these movies in reality for them to work.
I don't want them to be grounded in reality.
I don't either. Yeah. They're comic books.
Yeah.
They're comic books.
Okay?
Yes. So,
yeah.
People
so,
who can fly and...
Doesn't happen, people.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I don't need to expect that to be outside my front door.
Right.
Nope. Like you said, Ryan, like, you know, I see an IHOP, I relate to IHOP, then I see a guy flying past the IHOP, I'm back to fantasy land.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so we're moving into the something is under the ice concept of the film. This is where we meet Lois Lane.
Which before, I love the scene right before he gets there, because apparently he's hitchhiking. I don't know why the man's hitchhiking. Like,
you had a real
the
problem
with
that.
The man can run.
Right,
he can jump around.
Every time.
Why do I need to see him hitchhike? Why is he hitchhiking anywhere?
Every time.
Is he afraid somebody's going to see him suddenly speed off faster than a speeding bullet? The last time I checked, I can't see a bullet. So if he's going to be too fast for me to see. But once again, that's just me.
I love how much this bothers
around.
Ryan.
He does bother.
Every time.
Why is he hitchhiking?
Every time he hitchhiked in the movie,
this
Ryan
could
went
take
over
me,
to me.
This could take me 2 seconds. But I'm going to make sure it takes me 4 days. Don't understand it. Why? Or, even when he's Superman, he's still hitchhiking.
Yeah,
you're like,
that's the one.
Just put the cape on it. Why are you afraid of people seeing? Nobody can see you up there.
Okay, so this is where we meet Lois Lane. She's also heading to the site where there's something under the ice because she's a crack reporter and she's going to get a story out of this. And yeah, this is where we get Lois Lane's.
She makes penis jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right?
That's their explanation of this is her as a playing with the boys. She can make a penis joke.
Yeah.
In the softest, most feminine voice you could possibly imagine.
And then in the very next scene, she uses the word tinkle.
Tinkle.
Yes, yes.
Exactly.
What if I have to tinkle? So. She's there. She's trying to get a story on this. Clark is there, too. This is where they get we see the first encounter between Lois and Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's the fun scene where she just kind of hands him her bags when she gets off the plane or the helicopter. It says, watch that, it's heavy. And he's just kind of holding it. And that's fun.
Yeah, that's cute.
So, nightfall. Clark decides he's going to go check out whatever's under the ice.
Right.
And we get the scene where he's just barreling through the ice mountain using his heat vision, which is kind of neat. Of course, it makes you wonder why they're going to get up the next day and go, how did this giant tunnel get here? But
right.
He didn't care.
I don't think he hasn't
cared
about
it. He didn't care. He just wanted to
why
get in there.
Now?
He wanted to see what was going on, so he finds this alien ship that's under the ice. The military didn't know what it was. They thought it might be an old submarine or
right.
something like that that might have got frozen all
well,
this time
ago.
Well,
he could have overheard them, too, talking
right.
about that. So I'm not...
Right.
Yeah.
And this is also where we find out that this ship has apparently been here for anywhere between 18,000 and 20,000 years. So I guess Krypton's just, like, that's how long ago they were doing the whole sending scout ships out
apparently
to different
Earth
planets.
Like we were one of their outposts.
Yeah, we were... Earth was one of their outposts 20,000 years ago. But the ship is here, and it's interesting to think that their technology didn't change very much in 20,000 years. Like, that's one thing that I really
or
think
their
about.
Uniforms.
Yeah. Because he walks right into this ship. There's like a little floating droid in there that's getting ready to fire on him, but then he puts his little super flash drive in the device that he was carrying around with him, and it activates it, and it recognizes him, and the security thing turns off, and it doesn't attack him. You know, and this he's only been on Earth for 33 years. That's mm-hmm. Krypton blew up 33 yeah. years ago. This ship has been on Earth for 20,000 years.
Yeah.
That just seems like a really big
yeah,
amount of time for me.
They didn't think that.
Really big. So he's walking around inside there, and
has our technology really changed that much in the last
in 20,000 years?
No. Well, in some parts of the world, no.
Yeah.
All right. On that other hemisphere, on that other side of the world, no. It's still it.
So now, if I'm remembering correctly, before he actually like meets Jor-El, this is when Lois stumbles in, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So he's just kind of walking around checking things out. Lois follows him in there because she saw him.
Yes.
And
I think he had seen Jor-El.
No,
yeah,
I don't think.
Because as soon as he plugs that
because,
thing,
yeah,
and, like,
he sees him
down a hallway. And
he sees a guy. He sees somebody walking.
Yeah.
That's right. But before he can go actually talk to Jor-El, Lois tries to get in. She's trying to take a picture of this floating little droid. That's the security thing. It attacks her. It blasts her right there at the beginning. So then Clark realizes somebody's in trouble. Runs out. He smashes the heck out of that thing. And this is where we get kind of the real first connection between Lois and Clark, because he realizes she's bleeding out. She's got this huge wound, and we get to see him use his heat vision to cauterize the wound, which is a mm-hmm. cool idea. I really like that.
I really like it, too. But I don't like how he just dumps her out in the cold, being like, hey, you might get an infection. I'm just going to hope somebody's going to find you.
She's not going to get an infection once he's cauterized. Mm-hmm.
He's an MD. He knows it.
Yeah, so, yeah, he cauterizes it. He kind of lays her out there for them to find her the next day. And then he takes the ship. He flies the ship away,
I thought it was a really cool, and this is, again, getting into one of my eventual big problems with how the movie goes, is when they let Henry Cavill be a character, when they let him be, you know, Superman or Clark or whatever, and he actually has a few minutes to talk and relate.
Right.
And all that stuff, he comes off, like, you start to even get this sense, like, even right there, when he's just got a couple of comforting words for her, and then he's mm-hmm. like, you know, this is going to hurt, though, but he's got that overpowering tenderness to him, you know?
Right.
You're like,
definitely.
This guy's going to be great.
Yeah.
And they never, ever give you anything but small hints of that.
We're going to jump into that
later.
So, he takes the ship away. Now we're back in Metropolis, where Lois is trying to present this story to Perry White to tell him about this hero that saved her in this crazy incident where this alien ship attacked her, mm-hmm. and he's basically just like, you are nuts. You are not going to put that in our newspaper.
Yeah.
You sound like a crazy person.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, it really happened. This story needs to get out there. I want to find this guy. You know, that's why I want to put the story out there. I want to find my hero. On a very Lois Lane thing to do, I think. I like this. Like, she's trying to find
mm-hmm.
her hero. She's trying to find the Superman. She ends up leaking the report to, like, one of the, you know, tabloid guys.
Perry won't print it.
Perry won't print it.
To some website.
Yep.
Goes to a website.
Yep, exactly. Like a WikiLeaks kind of thing.
Right,
yep. Yeah. And leaks the story so that it can get out there and hopefully she will find her superhero. Yep. And then, from this scene, is this where we get the flashback to the...
this is where we go to the ship, at the North Pole.
Oh, so then we're at the ship at the North Pole.
Yeah.
Okay. Which, I guess, in a sense, is kind of like the Fortress of Solitude
now. It is
now.
The Fortress.
So he's landed the ship at the North Pole.
It was the Fortress of Solitude.
Fortress of Solitude. this is where Superman now meets his father, Jor-El, or the conscience of his father. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting, too, whereas in the Donner films, Jor-El was just kind of like this pre-recorded message that Clark could interact with a little bit, but it was like a floating head.
Yeah.
This is like a full-on conscience of Jor-El that can have full-on conversations with him, can just talk to him at will. It's interesting.
Well, you pay for Russell Crowe, you might as well use him as much as you can.
And Russell Crowe,
he's
really
good.
He was awesome. I liked Russell Crowe in this movie a lot. And so then we get kind of the breakdown now. He explains to Clark who he is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He explains that whole thing about the outposts and why this ship was on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he explained
love all that stuff.
Yep, explained how Krypton came to an end and how he sent him off and how he's the last son of Krypton.
They do that really cool, like, metallic flashback thing where they're kind of showing the war and all the stuff that happened.
I really like that. I like that scene. Yeah, it's a really neat scene. And yeah, he explains him. He's the
very
last son.
Old Iron Curtain Russian style.
Yeah. 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 Sure. It's really neat.
Peacekeeping. That's what I think of Russian style art.
So he tells Clark, you know, he's the last one. He's the last Kryptonian. He sent him here to kind of carry on the legacy of Krypton, but also so he could live his own life. He's meant to kind of merge the two worlds together, you know, Earth and Krypton in one person. And so this is where, like, all of this is fine. I like this. Until the little compartment opens up behind him while he's telling him.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. He's telling him that, you know, you're going to merge our two worlds together. This little compartment opens up in this 18,000-year-old spaceship. And there's the Superman costume.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
It's got, with the house.
With the House of L logo.
Yeah, exactly. But it's got a House of L logo.
And they did that, too, in the flashbacks when you were talking about the whole painting the picture. They actually have, like, they're showing when they're terraforming worlds, and they have a flag, and it has the Superman logo. So it has to be more of a Krypton thing, too.
Well, but each of them have their different symbols on their chests, though. Right. And the S is supposed to be the symbol of the House of L.
Well, but it's one of those, even if there were L ancestors on this outpost 18,000 years ago, why did they happen to have one pristine costume or, you know, suit, battle suit, whatever it is.
And I'm okay with it.
They just had one. Yeah. And I'm even less concerned with the logistics behind it and more concerned with the filmmaking behind it because, man, what an important reveal that you did terribly.
Yeah.
Horribly.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, this should have been one of those slow music builds.
No
slow
music.
Motion,
there was no music during
you
that.
You know, pans up, you see the thing, it comes into the light. You know, you get this feeling like, oh, he's going to be Superman.
Right.
I just got to wait past this scene and everything's going to be great. And he's going to put it on, and it's going to be fantastic. And they skip giving you any of that builder feeling, and they just go, and suit!
And suit, you know? Yep,
and the thing is like, this is not just like a suit for them. This is like their everyday clothes on Krypton.
Yeah.
To us, obviously, yes.
Right.
But he doesn't give them any direction. And even if I saw that, I'd be like, yeah, there's a suit. I wouldn't think, oh, I got to go put this thing on.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
No, it's like, at least talk about it and say, this is... He just sees the symbol of hope, and he's like, okay, but at no point is he like, hey, I think Jor-El should have explained to him, being like, this is a part of us. This is part of our culture.
Yes, yes.
I would, you know, not saying like a conversation being like, I would like you to wear this.
Right.
Being like, this is your difference.
Yeah.
You never got that sense of,
exactly.
This is me showing myself to the world as a Kryptonian. This
it almost makes you wonder if there's like some missing dialogue here or something. Because later on, he actually does tell Lois that that's the symbol of hope. But we don't actually hear Jor-El tell him that, do we?
He does. Because he opens it up and he says,
okay.
Yeah, he opens it up.
Yeah, but like you said, and it's another thing too, is it's not like, you kind of get that impression, like, it's like, all right, you know, this is the symbol of hope, wear this and go out and show this world something.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
you can make the argument that you kind of get that impression, but then he doesn't really do that at all.
Right.
Like, it's not like he becomes Superman at this point.
That's
he still doesn't
too.
Reveal himself as Superman until he's forced to.
Until he's forced to.
That's what I hate.
Yeah.
I am very upset about this movie being like, he's basically, at no point, like, what would he even ever reveal himself? If it wasn't for Zod coming down to Earth requesting that he would, it's like, no,
probably
he
not.
To stay in hiding.
And it's such a weird dynamic because you've got...
Because his dad told him to stay in hiding.
You've got Jonathan telling him, hey, keep hiding. And then you've got Jor-El telling him, you know, hey, this is the symbol you can wear. And you've got him, you know, bouncing around the Arctic trying to learn how to fly, but not really having any kind of direction at all.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing at all.
Right. So, yeah, the suit's revealed. And then the next shot is him walking out into the North Pole. He's wearing the suit. He's clean shaven now. So that made me laugh the first time I saw it. Now the second time I saw it, because the whole time this whole scene's going on afterwards, the dialogue of Jor-El's still happening where he's explaining things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I kind of got the impression the second time that maybe this is all happening over a period of time. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's actually staying there. He's learning some things from Jor-El.
Yeah.
It just wasn't really cut together the best.
No.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's going on here. Because the first time I saw the movie and he walked outside and immediately started trying to fly, I was like, well, why would he do that? But the second time I watched it, I was like, okay, maybe it's because he's there and he actually is learning. Yeah. And he's, because mm-hmm. Jor-El does say that thing about how, he says that line about how he's got to figure out the limits to his powers. Mm-hmm. And that's the point where he starts hopping around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, it's, this does make a little bit more sense now. I just missed that the first time.
That's kind of Donner too, because yeah. you remember in Superman the movie, you know, when he goes to the North Pole with the crystal and the fortress right. comes and he finds Jor-El, like, he's still like teenage Clark.
Yeah.
And when
yeah.
he leaves, he's Christopher Reeve.
He's 30
years old. Right, yeah.
So you get that very distinct impression that, man, he's there for a while.
It goes back to the whole, because Superman is just so much derived from biblical being Moses and Jesus. And that's right. the whole point is yeah. when he turns 30, because that's when Jesus revealed right. himself
yeah.
to being who he was when he turned 30 and that whole thing. So, yeah. I agree with that. I never thought of it that way, being like, okay, he could have spent some more time
yeah.
there.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that. Like,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah.
They just all this stuff happens, but they yeah. don't give you any indication of what's no. going on in the background.
Right.
No. You're just supposed to assume everything.
Exactly. Right, exactly. So then we see him hopping around, and then he figures out the flight, and he's taking flight. And I do really like this scene, because we get this moment where he gets this big smile on his face mm-hmm. when he's flying, because he's like, I'm freaking flying right now.
Yeah.
This is awesome. And this right here is the first and probably the only time in the entire movie where you get kind of that nice, happy, heartfelt feeling yeah. about Superman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, this right here is...
Yeah.
kind of it.
Yeah. Happy,
like,
happy
you
Clark
see him
lasted,
happy?
Lasted
yeah.
from the beginning of the first flight to the end of
yeah,
the
exactly. Yeah, he's yeah. so happy here. He's flying around. He's having a good time. And you're like, yes,
yeah.
finally we're seeing the Superman we should be seeing. This is great. It's uplifting. It's making me feel really good. But like you said, once the scene is over, he's back to being
yeah,
sad Clark
brooding.
Again.
No,
yeah.
Well, brooding superhero cell.
Yeah, yeah.
If
he's not.
Batman.
He's not Bruce Wayne.
Batman.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's not Bruce Wayne.
Uh-uh.
He's Clark Kent. He needs to be different. All right. So the Fortress of Solitude scene ends. This is where we get the flashback to the tornado scene. Correct. This is about the time
no,
the tornado rolls.
This
in?
Is her hopping around trying to find.
That's right.
Who he is, and then ends up there.
That's right. Okay. So Lois is tracking him down. She finds him. He's standing at the gravesite of Jonathan Kent.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where basically, this right here is basically where they completely eliminate the whole Clark Kent disguise for
yeah.
Lois Lane.
Oh. And the
because,
rest of the world.
Because she walks right up and is basically like, you're the guy with the powers. And
well,
he's
actually,
like,
he comes up to her.
Yeah.
She comes up to the gravestone.
She
and
came
he,
up to his house, though, so she
yeah,
knows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah. But she comes up and is looking at the gravestone
yeah.
and he kind of shows
her.
Up behind her.
Yeah.
You know, like, you've been looking for me or whatever,
yep.
you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't remember what he says.
Like, you got powers. Yep, I got the powers. I'm the guy.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I love you. And he's like, yeah, I think I love you
I
too.
Think that was the
That's pretty much exactly how it
correctly.
Went down. That's pretty much how it went yeah. down. So as they're standing there over the scene, this is where we get the flashback to the tornado scene. This is where we get to see Jonathan Kent's death.
The worst scene in the movie.
The worst scene in most movies.
Mostly.
Yeah.
There's
so,
not a whole lot of worse
so,
scenes in many movies.
All right, let me explain sure. what happens first, and then we'll talk about why we disliked it. So basically, the
dislike,
scene
there's
a okay, the scene rolls with the Kents all in a truck driving down the highway there, and Clark for whatever reason is super mad at Jonathan Kent. He's yelling at him. Yeah. He says the words, "You're not my real dad,"
which is fine.
You know, he's having a teenage fight with
yeah,
his dad.
It's fine with it.
Right as soon as he says that. The storm comes rolling in. You see this tornado forming. Serious stuff's about to happen. Jonathan stops the car, says, whoa, hold on. Clark's even getting ready to apologize for just saying what he said because he realized he was a little out of line. And then this tornado starts ripping through. Jonathan tells them all to take cover under the overpass. Right before he's able to take cover himself, they realize they left the dog in the car. So Clark's like, I'll go get the dog, don't worry. And Jonathan's like, no, you stay here because I don't want people seeing that you got superpowers. Let me go get the dog. So Jonathan runs to get the dog. The tornado throws a car at his leg. He gets stuck. The dog gets free. By the time he gets out of the car, he can't walk anymore because one of his legs is mangled. Clark's like, I'll come get you. I'll come get you right now. Jonathan tells him not to come, holds his hand up. Tornado just whips him away, and Clark watches his dad die.
Because all four people on the underpass might have saw,
But a busload of kids already saw him do something before. This is where we say
everything about the scene stands outside the realm of the characters, outside the realm of movie logic, outside the realm of real life logic.
Yep.
It goes against literally everything. And this was the scene too. All this other stuff I've been nitpicky about up until now, like, I've been excited for this movie for 2 years. I went through the first 20 minutes of this movie loving it and juiced for it. I saw some stuff where I'm like, I don't understand the pacing, but we're getting there, everything's fine. Nothing had made me, like, angry up until this point, and then Jonathan gets whisked away by that tornado, and I went, I'm out.
When I read it in the script, I was upset.
Yeah.
That was the thing, and I knew it was coming. And it just puts an exclamation point on everything that's bad about Jonathan Kent in this movie. Not Kevin Costner bad, Jonathan Kent. Not Kevin's fault.
Right, it's not the acting. Yeah. Just the way the character's written.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That whole...
Yeah. There's just so many things that should have or could have happened right there.
Now,
like, first of all, I don't know any farmer who would run into a tornado for a dog.
No.
You know, farmers love their dogs. They also understand that they're dogs, you know?
Yeah.
That's how that works there. Plus, there were 1,000 cars on that road for some reason, and 16 people under that underpass. Where the hell was everybody else?
Right, right.
They kept on running.
And when it's like, well, I'll go back and get the dog, okay.
Okay,
you don't have to use superpowers to do that.
Yeah.
You can just go do that, and no one will see
exactly.
because there's a tornado happening. Exactly.
Well, this is one of those scenes where it's like, okay, well, we definitely need to have Jonathan die, and we have to show him dying. What's the best way we can do this to explain about how Clark has been hiding all this time to explain
that's,
it to
that's
Lois.
That's what
we need to do. There was no thought process in that scene. It was just like, oh, we just need to show Jonathan dying, and the fact that Clark could possibly do something, but he'd have to show everybody that he did something. Even though he's been doing that apparently his whole childhood.
That's their point, though. They set it up so poorly.
Yeah.
I kind of took it as, and I don't know what the actual motivation was. I just have my own paranoid assumptions, you know. Mm-hmm. But they always do these remakes or updates or whatever, and they have to change stuff.
Yeah.
They don't have to change stuff for a reason because it was already
fine. For the
fine.
Sake of changing it.
And they try to change stuff just enough where they haven't changed the sense, but they've kind of changed what's going on just for the sake of going, well, this is my movie and this is how it's going to happen.
Right.
And there's no reason for that here.
No,
that ruins a lot of background there because the whole, you know, when Jonathan dies in almost every other version where he dies, it's of a heart attack. And there's a very powerful lesson for Clark to learn there about how he can't save everyone.
Yeah.
Right.
There are things out beyond his control. And it's a rite of passage almost.
Yep.
It's his transition into manhood when he realizes that. Except in this movie, it's like, well, you can't save everybody, except you definitely could save your dad.
Yeah.
You just
did it. The one person you probably want to save more than anybody.
Yeah, like they completely skip over that lesson. And Ryan, you had a really good idea where it's like, well, if they wanted to change it, why couldn't they have left him alive until Zod showed up and have Zod kill him too? And he could have, Zod could have been responsible for killing both of his parents. You still could have had that lesson buried somewhere in there on, well, I couldn't get to him in time to stop him. You know, I couldn't save my dad.
Right.
That could have been part of it. It could have added, fuel to the fire for the feud there. It could have made really made the end make a whole lot more sense.
Right.
If they had done it that way, and it would have been different. But like you said, too, they just went, well, we need a quick explanation. So they just threw something stupid in there and didn't put a second thought
into it.
Well,
it seemed like they had this put in their mind the whole time where it's like, okay, well, we're going to make it a point where Clark is not going to show himself to the world ever. It's like they wanted that to be like a big focus point, and that's where the whole Jonathan Kent story just comes out of left field, and he becomes the bad guy in this movie in the script, being like, okay, he's the one holding Clark back.
Right.
He's holding Clark back this whole entire movie. And even like we said before, we don't even get a reveal of Superman. We get the world is threatened. Somebody is pulling him out of hiding.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, he's not hiding. He's still living his life. He's just not in front of the world saving everybody every second.
Right.
That's fine. But we never, by no chance, does Clark ever choose to do anything. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he's forced into everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why they went that route. I just don't understand. I mean, you never got to... You never... And that's the problem with this whole movie. and we'll talk so much about this, is what it missed on, and that's the humanity.
Yeah.
They wanted to say that. That was the whole point in this movie. It's like, okay, we're gonna bring Clark, we're gonna bring this alien into our real world. We're gonna make this more grounded. And we're not gonna do the Kryptonite thing. His Kryptonite's gonna be his emotions and how he deals with becoming a human. We didn't get any of that
through
this movie.
You see vague shadows of going, well, I've heard what they're trying to do.
Right.
And I guess because I've heard that, I can sort of see it here.
Yeah.
But if you go into this movie cold, like not hearing any of the hype and not knowing what their points were going in or anything like that, you miss every bit of that.
Yeah.
Because they don't actually display it for you.
No. Right.
Which is what a movie sort of needs to do.
Yes, exactly. You know? Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. They take a lot of things for granted. They think a couple lines of dialogue automatically, oh, yeah. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. I need you to show me his parents transitioning him into being the man he's going to be.
Yeah.
Because, that's the thing. It's like, it seems like Jor-El raised him more on Earth than John and Martha did, which is not the case.
Yeah.
And that's not what I want to say. It's almost like they were just babysitters till Jor-El showed up.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the sense you got.
No kidding.
And it's like, you kind of ruined those two people's whole character.
Yeah.
Right.
They make that build up where Jonathan's whole point is you got to hide from everything. You got to keep yourself tucked away.
Mm-hmm.
And man, lo and behold, when stuff goes down, hiding goes out the window.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Everybody he can that he's Clark Kent, and anybody who misses his note gets Lois's.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
I didn't like the change from it being a heart attack that killed Pa Kent.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the big thing that was missed by it being the whole tornado thing was the fact that the heart attack was something that Clark couldn't save his dad from dying from. Mm-hmm. The tornado, he could have saved his dad.
So easily.
Just could have done it,
and
he just didn't because they were trying to get across that whole stupid, don't show anybody you're a Superman idea.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I just, they loses something. He loses something in his growing up process by not realizing that he can't save everybody with his powers.
Yeah, because that's like his just, jump into manhood.
Yeah, exactly.
And they just
missed it completely.
And it's like, I guess they just didn't get the point of why that happened.
Yeah.
And therefore, their vision doesn't have the point.
I don't like it at all, because that's the point, because that's the point in where he goes on his whole journey, and that's where we see him at the beginning, on the boat and then in the bar doing his odd jobs. But I still want a scene with him and his mom, because it seems like, oh, dad's dead, I'm out of here,
I'm out. I gotta go find myself. Yeah,
the house is gonna go, everything, just, you're done, figure it out yourself.
I'm running,
it's like,
this
farm. I need at least I still need that scene with her being like, you need to go, you need to find yourself, you need to, because look, apparently he could have saved his dad and then just left.
Yeah.
Would have been the same result.
Yeah.
But Kent would have been alive.
Jeez. All right. Okay, so we're going to move right along, because now we're at the point where Zod is here. He's out. He's out of the Phantom Zone, and he has made himself known to Earth. We see this big scene where the power goes out all across the world. Every television, every phone, every device that's got a screen pops
Sherpas
on.
In the
That had a TV.
I love it.
What?
Yeah. Love it.
The screen pops on everywhere. We get this message from this guy in this mask from outer space. It looks very alien-like with that mask on in that scene.
They've got everything but HD cameras.
Yes. Yep, exactly. This is where he basically says, you've got one of mine. I want him back. You guys give him to me or you're all going to pay. That's basically the message he sends.
Right.
This is the part where the military is now trying to figure out what's going on. Then the guy who Lois leaked that story to is now on CNN or whatever, you know, whatever the news station is saying. Somebody needs to go ask Lois. She knows exactly who this guy is. I got this story that she gave me. So the FBI all shows up at Lois's house or some sort of military or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're basically like, look, you take us to this guy. We got to get to this guy. So they all wind up in Smallville. And this is where Superman presents himself in full costume and everything. Presents himself to the military. He's like, guys, I'm the guy. I'm who they're looking for.
We can't skip over that whole church scene.
Oh, that's right. The church scene.
That
good one.
That could have been a lot better than what it was.
All right. So the church scene.
Where they give where they have to hammer us over the head that he's Jesus.
Yeah.
Again.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure there's no question in your mind. He's definitely Jesus, everybody. And they got that little shot of him sitting in the pew with the
that stained glass.
Yeah, the stained glass Jesus, like right behind him in the shot. You know, it's like, all right,
subtle.
Cool. He's
so subtle.
Yeah.
I thought it was a neat scene. Like, I mean, you're probably right. I think it could have been a lot more than it was.
Yeah.
But any time that they let Henry Cavill be any level of Clark, I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
that's what made me so mad about the lack of him being able to actually act and be personable or whatever.
Right.
So I think, they probably could have done a little bit more with that scene, maybe. Well, but I enjoyed
it was okay. But the dialogue, it's misleading once again, because it's like, you know, he tells him who he is. The priest is kind of taken back, but obviously not that scared. Apparently, we don't freak out as much when we see aliens as much as Jonathan thought we would.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, we've had plenty of science fiction throughout the years to prepare us. So even if aliens come right now, I don't think everybody's going to be like, oh my God, we've never heard of one of these things.
Right.
So, but I just didn't like the dialogue because he's like, oh, you know, Zod wants me, but I don't know. And he's like, well, what does your gut tell you? It's like, is that the first thing a priest is going to tell me? Oh, what's your gut tell you? No, I would have liked it better. It's like, what's your heart telling you? Something like that. Being like, getting more into the human part of him. Being like, your gut?
That's
bad. And he's like, well, I can't trust Zod. And he's like, but then again, I don't know if I can trust humanity. Being once again, being like, why does Clark care about us? We treat him like crap his whole entire life. Every flashback scene you've shown me, somebody is treating him poorly.
Yep. Somebody's tormenting him, and his dad is telling us how
nobody is.
Yeah, exactly. Jonathan scared him into thinking that we were all going to rip him apart if we found out he was an alien. And I get that for sure. I do like the concept of this scene a lot, though, because for a small town farm boy to go to his church and talk to a priest to say, what should I do, and get some guidance, I think is very, that's very Clark Kent.
Yep. Yeah.
And I like
and
that
I,
a lot.
I do like, because it shows obviously that he's,
he
goes there, and he obviously went there with his parents
and
everything. It's,
you know, that's the ultimate place. Like, if you're searching for something, where do you go?
Right.
You go to church.
But that was, and that was the whole thing, is they wanted to get that line in there, being like, you know, you have to have a leap of faith before the trust comes. Trust comes later. And I think that's just kind of comforting words from a priest being like, listen, we're not going to turn against you
if
we know that you're not going to destroy us.
Right, exactly.
It's like, yes, we always take precautions to threatening things because at any moment you could just be like, I'm going to start killing these people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I understand that, and that comes later on in the movie. I'm okay with that line. That's good.
All right, so this is where Superman then decides, well, I'm going to suit up. I'm going to present myself to everybody, let everybody know that I'm here, I have powers, and I'm going
to
turn
myself
over.
This is the big reveal to the world.
This is the big reveal to the world.
Yeah.
I'm the Superman. Here I am.
In a desert in front of the
military. In a desert in front of the military.
So he shows up, he turns himself in, he says, I'll go peacefully because they want me, so take me in. So this is where we get the scene of him in the handcuffs.
And this is
they
where
walk
we get the
in.
Worst poster in movie history.
Oh, yeah, Superman in handcuffs. That? Yeah.
Wow.
So,
thanks, WB Marketing.
For whatever reason, Lois gets to sit down and talk face to face with him.
Well, he demands that.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
That's his only.
Okay. So he talks to Lois, and they have a conversation. What was the basis of this?
This should have been the best scene in the movie, but they didn't. They don't let their
20 seconds long.
They don't let their, you know, they let all their side characters talk as long as they want to.
Yeah.
They don't let any of their main characters actually play parts.
This is where I turned to John, I think, during the third viewing of it. And I go, have you noticed that no scene has lasted more than probably 30 seconds, 30 to a minute?
Yeah.
Like, they don't let anything get any further than that before
that's
cutting
crazy.
Away to something
and if
else.
You go watch that movie again, and that's how that works. Even the talking scenes are very quick, and then they're over, and it's back to another flashback that's very quick, and then it's forward to a little bit of action, and there's no conversation in that movie that lasts more than six, 7 lines probably.
No.
Oh, that's that. I didn't even notice that. Wow. Yeah. So this is kind of a fun scene too I love the part when he stands up and like just kind of separates his hands and the handcuffs pop off.
He gets about 2 lines and 20 seconds to show everything that he can do possibly to these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the most
Superman like you're watching it going, okay, I'm finally going to get entertained by something that's happening, and it's so just almost fantastic how personable he can be, you know, because he is. He's walking in and she's like, So you let him, you let them handcuff you, and he's like, it makes him feel better.
Yeah.
You know, what,
yeah.
Like, when, you know, it's like, you know, she says something, and he goes, well, it wouldn't be much of a surrender if I resisted.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And he like, gives that little eyebrow lift, and you're like, okay, yeah, this is like, the boy. Right,
this could be the guy, you know? But then again, as soon as it starts, he gets up and he does a spiel to the army, which was also awesome because that's when he goes, "All right, let's lay our cards on the table." And he just busts those handcuffs like they're not there.
Yeah,
you know. And he's telling people what's in their pockets, and he's like, "Look, we've got a bigger problem. I am not here to, you know, to attack you guys. I'm here to help, but I don't know what they're gonna do." And then, boom, just the scene's just over. You know?
Yeah,
there's no real resolve. There's no thinking about it. There's no, you don't get any impression of. You know, maybe the army guys are considering this, and maybe the military leaders are going, all right, maybe this guy is on our side.
Right.
Maybe we are in over our heads. You don't get any of that. They just rush right to the next scene of him standing there with Lois in the middle of the desert. It's just those two now, all of a sudden, you know.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, maybe now they'll interact again. Nope.
Because this is where Zod's ship arrives.
Yep.
Zod's ship shows up. They take Superman into custody. Then they demand Lois, too. Did they give a reason why they demanded Lois?
No, I don't think so.
They just wanted Lois. So they demand Lois. The military says, well, you said, you know, want your guy, not one of ours. And she says, no, I'll go. Let me just go. So they let her go.
Yeah, how did they even know she was...
Was there something...
I couldn't figure it out. Both times I watched it, I went, why did they want Lois?
I remember just thinking, well, they want her because she's with him, and it's probably a leverage piece. But now I'm trying to go, well, how did they even know she was with him?
Yeah.
I don't know. But regardless, we get up on the ship, and as soon as we walk in, we see this scene where they put Lois in a breather mask because the... The atmosphere is different. It's a Krypton atmosphere on the ship.
It won't kill her, but
it's different. But they don't put one on Clark because he's a Kryptonian.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, he'll be fine. But then we notice that he's not used to that atmosphere, so it starts having some effects on him. I thought that was interesting.
It's good. Yeah. I really
like that. Like, he's feeling weak.
Yeah.
Obviously, he doesn't have powers now because he's in a Krypton atmosphere, right?
It seemed like it took a long time for that to... Because that seems like one of those things to me. If you walk into a different atmosphere, automatically you're breathing different.
True, yeah. But it's
this time, like, he was on the ship, he went through the elevator or whatever, he got on board, and, you know, 30 seconds later, all of a sudden he's coughing up blood.
Yeah.
That seemed kind of weird to me.
Yeah, it was a little weird. I don't fault it that much, because even when they flip back to the Earth's atmosphere and they change it, the Kryptonians don't feel it at first.
Yeah.
Because it's not, like, that much different, apparently. It's just a little bit.
Just enough
to make things different.
So then that kind of leads us into this scene because he passes out because the atmosphere is different.
Explain why he loses his strength, though. I understand losing the ability to fly, but his strength should still be there.
Well, but the strength
close
is
to the sun.
Well, I guess
does atmosphere
unless
zap away
unless
the sun?
Unless this ship is completely shielded by that, I have no idea.
Well, I would figure. Well, he'd still have enough in him.
Yeah.
I think. But that's fine. I really don't care too much.
So he passes
that
out. This is like a big moment of weakness for Superman because he's out cold now. He's done. And then this kind of goes into this dream sequence thing, which we later find out was them like probing his mind.
Right.
They tell us that afterwards because we find out the same thing happened to Lois.
Except they probed him and put a lot more information in.
Yes. Because what happened, like, there's this probing where Zod basically appears to him.
Well, he finds out who his mom is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zod appears to him in this dream state, basically, and just explains to him everything that's going on. Look, I'm from Krypton. I knew your dad. I killed your dad. Sorry about that.
Well, he hasn't done that part yet. He hasn't said that.
Oh, he hasn't?
No, no.
I thought that was in the dream sequence.
Yeah, that comes much later.
Okay. But he tells him that he knew his dad, right? Doesn't he tell him he knew his family and everything?
Yeah.
Like, he almost presents, like... Like he's trying to
it's
be friendly
an olive
to
branch.
Him. Yeah, he's trying to.
Is, well, like I said, Zod's thing is Krypton.
Yeah,
Krypton,
and in fairness, he is trying
to
be friendly to him.
Kind of, but you still get a sense that at any moment he will snap and he'll just, I'm done with this.
Yeah,
thing.
I mean,
which
like
he is because he did it to his own people on Krypton.
He's got that. I mean, he's got that, you know, House of El impression, and he knows he's, you know, like I had to kill this guy's dad. He's probably not going to like that. And he's been raised by Earthlings, and, you know, he's a different creature than I am because he's natural birth, and I'm this, you know, pre-programmed thing.
Well, that's the thing.
However, if he had walked up and Kal-El had been like, you know, I'm home, guys! Yay! Zod would have been as happy as can be.
Yeah.
And that's fine, too. I don't care. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Not happy, but I'm okay with them not doing the whole revenge on his son type
thing.
That's fine. because it doesn't make any sense in this movie. Plus, he knows that he knows where the Codex is.
Right. Yeah.
His whole point is getting that from him.
And that's right. Where we kind of get from this scene, too, right? Like, this is where we know that he's after the Codex for sure. Like,
that's his main purpose. He doesn't really care about Kal-El whatsoever. Nope.
This is where he explains how they got out of the Phantom Zone, because we find out that when Krypton blew up, it deactivated the ship that they were being held captive in.
Which makes
and
sense. I like
so
that.
It just fell apart. So it's funny to think about the fact that they were isolated off of Krypton and sent to this prison place.
Right.
And then basically that saved their lives because Krypton was destroyed.
Well, that's another thing, too, because they struck
it
some...
freed them.
It freed them.
Yep. And it struck some dialogue at the beginning when they're put into the Phantom Zone, because before they're going to be put in the Phantom Zone, I believe it was like Zod was like, you know, don't do this because what happens when Krypton explodes? No one will be there to free us.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're sentencing us to death and you're 2 weeks...
Yeah, I think they kind of needed to leave that dialogue in there, because if I'm... Zod, knowing that Krypton's going to explode, and be like, get me off this planet. Send me somewhere
else.
Yeah,
see, they didn't know that that was just going to, like, fall apart and that they'd be free afterwards. But there is that cool scene, too, where it shows them getting freed and seeing the planet destroyed, and they just kind of have this, like, sadness of their home world's gone, and now they're just floating out here, and they've got nothing. So you almost kind of start to feel sorry for them a little bit, because now they're just traveling around trying to find these outposts to see if there's any Kryptonians left. This is where we start seeing all the dead Kryptonians all over the universe.
Yeah.
Apparently none of them survived anywhere, and they're them and Kal are it. They're the only Kryptonians.
Yep.
So that's when they locate Earth, they locate Kal. Zod's after the Codex.
They found that because of that
ship.
Because he activated that ship.
Yeah,
which
when
I'm
Clark
happy
activated,
with. That.
Yeah, that was a very
Because that
cool
was another thing,
too,
is like, that's a good way to bridge it, being like, oh, they showed up right after he gets the suit. But it's like, it makes more sense.
Yeah, he brought him
Clark
there.
Clark activated that ship, and that activated a homing
beacon. Once again, saying if that didn't happen, would Clark ever reveal himself to the world? That's my problem.
That's
just my problem. Sorry.
So, then we kind of get to the scene where they throw Lois in kind of like this other room, I guess. It's probably not really a brig or anything, because they're on the prison thing that they were put on, right?
Yeah.
So that's what they're using as their ship now.
Yeah.
So they throw her kind of in this other room, and they're basically like, you just stay here for a while we deal with Kal. And she's got that little super flash drive thing in her pocket that Clark had slipped her earlier. And so she sees this little control panel that's shaped just like it. She pops it in there. And bam, Jor-El pops up.
Yep.
She's now uploading Jor-El's conscience into the ship, which is kind of neat. I like that. So then we get this great scene where he interacts with Lois, and he kind of, you know, explains to her what's kind of going on, and gets her off the ship. He's like, well, I'm going to get you out of here. We're going to get Clark out of here, and, you know, you guys are going to fix all
this. Well, and he kind of really, really presents, like, this would have been, if they had presented the Kryptonians arriving as a true, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe this is good. Maybe this is bad. If they had presented it as a first contact sort of thing where Earth, you know, thought, hey, maybe this is going to be great. This would have been a really cool scene, because it's Jor-El going, things are not good.
This is going
to turn bad. Someone has to stop them. Kal's the only one who can, and you have to help him.
Yeah.
You know? But instead, when they did that, it kind of came off as, you know, it's like, things are going to go terribly, and everybody's like, we know.
We got this.
We're sure of that.
Yeah, we figured that out. Figured that out.
No, they did. No, and, because I was just watching, bringing up that point, because I never even thought about that, but bringing up that point, because I was just watching Independence Day, obviously, yesterday, because of Independence Day. But, yeah, even there is even that slight, you know, stuff's going down in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
There's
no
doubt about it. But there is that beginning where it's like the saucers show up, and there's that sense of, well, maybe we just communicate first.
Yeah.
It's always, let's
communicate
first.
That chick
first.
From Saved by the Bell, the college years, goes up to that roof to party with the aliens and then explodes.
Yeah, got the signs and everything.
Yeah. There are people who are like, yay, this is exciting and happy news, you know?
Yeah.
And you didn't get any kind of sense of that. And that's not even a complaint about this movie.
No,
that was just this very specific scene. Yeah,
right.
Going, that could have almost been a neat dynamic, except we already knew things were bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So Jor-El basically guides her to an escape pod. She gets launched back to Earth. Also, while he's uploading himself into the ship, he changes the atmosphere in the ship, to an Earth atmosphere, which gives Clark his powers back and kind of makes everybody else, you know, a little, a little woozy, I guess.
Which at this point, because, well, the good thing, because Zod's not on the ship anymore. Because I'm just like, why does he just stay on the ship and just take everybody out right now?
Hey, I totally forgot. You know what the best thing about Krypton is?
Because apparently they still have evil German doctors. Even on Krypton. Yeah. What was up with that guy?
I don't know.
I don't know.
The scariest guy on the ship.
We will make him talk.
I'm surprised they didn't bust out like a drill and start to go into his tooth at that moment.
So Superman breaks out. He busts his way through the ship. Lois is running into some trouble on the way down, so he does this great thing where he actually saves her from the escape.
The only person he saves. It's gotta be Lois.
So this is where he saves Lois.
You're skipping all right past all the Jesus stuff.
Oh, that's right. He fell out of this, because
that's the one where they go, just in case you missed it the first time.
That's right.
We will barrage you with it because Jor-El tells him, well, hey, punch this wall, and he punches this wall and half the ship explodes.
Yeah.
So there's this big opening, and this is that very powerful, you know, like, you can save her, Cal.
Right.
You can save them all, you know, and right there, and in case even that didn't get you to the Jesus thing, for no reason whatsoever, he spreads his arms out and falls and just kind of glides out of the ship in the crucifixion pose.
Yep.
And then spins around and rushes down to save Lois.
And before that, it's there's the talk where, because this is after Zod does his dream sequence, being like, the whole point, why do you think your father gave you the Kodaks to send you to Earth? It's to build another Krypton. And it's like, even your father, Jor-El, knew that there would be sacrifices, things have to jump. And then he gets that moment with his father before he does the whole crucifix thing, being like, is this true? Did you really send me here to build more Kryptonians? Is that the whole point? And he's like, yes, I thought we could bridge the two worlds. And I'm like, I don't like that one bit.
I don't understand what his plan was, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Is Kal-El just supposed to assume that, oh, I can build everything with this ship. And I can make more Kryptonians. Apparently the bad way, though, because I have the Kodaks and I have the machine to give birth to all these people.
Yep.
So everything bad about Krypton you want me to do here on Earth? And number two is, knowing that I'm godlike on Earth, because you actually say it in the beginning of the movie, do you really think gods and little ants like that could exist on the same Earth without there being a master and slave? No.
Yeah.
Never.
Right.
Even if we are with natural and not Kryptonian style birthing, there's still going to be people being like, why are we hanging with these people?
Right.
We have superpowers.
Yeah. Right.
Because you're going to make more military
leaders
who want to protect their people by having all of
you
these
can't
primitive
have two
people,
different species
you know,
live on the same planet and be like, oh, there you go.
But that's one of those things, even that, I'm fine with that just being a misguided Jor-El plan.
Yeah,
well,
you know.
Me too.
But what was the whole point of sending? I didn't like that whatsoever, because it went me, because
well,
I was watching.
That, but even if that was his point for sending him,
right.
And Cal goes, well, that's what I was supposed to do, except instead I'm just going to protect Earth, I would be fine with that. But that's not really how they, you know, it's another one of those things where they bounce all these concepts kind of out there.
Yeah.
They don't really drive any of them home. So it's like, was that how it happened? Or are we misunderstanding Jor-El's plan to begin with?
I don't think Jor-El should have had that plan, whatever. Because he's basically having the same plan as Zod. You're being like, oh, we have the same idea.
Well, but he doesn't want him to destroy Earth, I didn't get the impression. I just didn't get the impression of what exactly he did want.
Did he want him to breed with humans? And then you get in a whole different
WB
discussion.
Executive didn't want that. That didn't work at all the last time they tried.
No. All right, so we're off the ship. We're back down in Smallville now, right?
Yeah,
because
he saves Lois. Again.
Saves Lois.
He saves somebody.
They go to... how did they get into the big battle here?
Because
this is where the Smallville battle begins.
Well, it's after they probe Superman and Zod figures out where he's from.
Right.
And he wants to find the ship because he thinks the ship...
That's right, because they go and they approach Ma Kent, right?
Right.
And they're like, where's the Kodaks? Where are you hiding the Kodaks? She's like, what? I don't know what that is, guys. They find the ship. They go in there. It's the Kodaks isn't in there.
They pick up powers quickly.
Yeah.
They know exactly what they can do right off the bat.
Yeah.
Which is whatever.
Threw that truck through a house. But this is awesome because this is when Superman just comes flying in and just tackles hell out of Zod.
Yeah,
because now he's pissed.
Yeah.
You're messing with my mom, you know? So
could have been that upset to go save Pa Kent, but zoomed right through to say Ma.
Well, he's in a super suit now.
This is where the wanton destruction of property begins, though.
Yes, it is.
This is where you get the true indication that... you know, Clark may not like the other Kryptonians and he may not want the entire world to end, but as an individual, he doesn't care a crap about you.
No, you know? Not at all.
Yeah.
He will blow you up in the middle of your gas station.
He yep. will destroy your grain bins. He won't even try. He will explode the train you're on.
Oh.
He will throw you.
And apparently
you
know, throwing somebody into a train on him actually explodes,
oh, yeah.
too.
And everything
that.
Explodes,
apparently
too.
Trains are running on yeah. gasoline.
Everything explodes and, in this movie. Everything.
But they, I mean, there was no point where the action stops for him to try. I guess there was one army guy
one army
out of a
guy.
Helicopter.
Yes. The helicopter.
The
yep.
army guy.
Now, the other, like, 40 army guys that got murdered ruthlessly, he didn't lift a finger to stop. At least he didn't murder most of them. He killed a lot of innocent people later. But we'll get to that when we get to
right,
Metropolis.
Right. Yep, so that's fight scene happens. And I will say that I didn't think the destruction in this scene didn't bother me as much as the Metropolis stuff
yeah.
does.
Oh, not.
There was a lot of it here. Things were blowing up all over the place. But we got a really cool, fun fight scene with Superman
Man,
and
how,
some other
how
Kryptonians.
Good was all the hand-to-hand stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, we got like, some great fighting scenes.
I love Snyder. Say what you want about Snyder. God, his action is amazing.
Well, that's
yeah,
another
right?
thing, too. This is where I thought I was going to get Snyder action, though, and that's what I missed in this movie. And it never gotten to those points where it's like, oh, this is a Snyder fight scene, though. I never got that slow motion, and everybody might have like been complaining about those in his past movies, but this is the perfect opportunity to show me, and it doesn't even have to be slow motion. It could be regular motion while everything around it's slow
yeah.
motion, showing
yeah.
how fast these guys are.
Yeah.
And actually do
really
some scenes where
that.
I don't have to see a visual effect with a fighting.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. But whatever. It's still
good.
There was still
one of those things to me that got a lot better with multiple viewings, because the more, mm-hmm. you know, I've seen it three times now, I think.
Yeah.
And this, you know, the first time I saw it, I'm just like, oh, I believe that I'm visually stimulated right now. I think this looks neat. My brain can't process fast
right.
enough to know what the heck's going on.
Right.
The next couple of times, though, you're just geared up and you kind of know what's happening already, so you can pay a little bit more attention to the punches that are being thrown and you know, like the dive tackles that they're doing
yeah.
left and right.
Right.
The fact that you really, you know, you can see a lot of this stuff going on. And I thought it had a very Snyder feel. It didn't have that slow-mo thing, like you said, and I think that would have been a really neat
that would have been
blend
a cool
of
effect.
Concepts.
Yeah,
yeah, if they would have done his slow-mo, but in the background, like you just said, that
yeah.
could have been great.
I'm definitely happy it wasn't a Nolan fight
yes.
scene, because the fight scenes in the Batman
films...
You
mean live up to what it's supposed to be?
Oh, man. Well, come on. The fight scenes in the Batman films were just not
it's
good.
The worst fight
They're just
scene.
Not
yeah.
good. They
no,
were so
no,
bad.
No. It's
not they were nothing
not
but...
It's
yeah,
the
they were close-up flashes where you couldn't tell what was actually happening.
The switch from Batman Begins to Dark Knight was the funniest thing ever. Because my one complaint about Begins was like, it was a great movie, but the action was a little weird because everything was so close in, you couldn't tell what was going on. I just wish they'd pan back a few feet, you know? And then I watched The Dark Knight, and I'm like, oh, go back in,
which I'm
awful.
Fine,
yeah.
which I'm fine with
yeah.
Batman, because he's supposed to be so, he comes out of the shadows so quick, and then, yeah, later on, you're just like, oh, God, who's choreographing this stuff?
Well,
yeah.
We always talked about, too, making the Snyder connection again, the prison break scene in The Watchmen yep.
mm-hmm.
is what a Batman fight scene should
yep.
look
yep.
like.
Yeah.
Watching Night Owl walk through that prison, just walk through that prison,
yep.
uh-huh.
and take out every prisoner that comes in his path
yep.
is a total Batman fight
we
scene.
We had this discussion after Watchmen
yeah.
several
yeah
times.
Being like
yeah
and I remember me and John had it and I even and I even told Zach this when I was discussing it with him before
he's on a first name basis.
I am
with
Mr.
Zach,
Snyder
with Zach Snyder.
Hey, I had my
just
one
saying.
Conversation with him and
close,
I made it count.
I was close enough to hug him once.
Once. So, but no, I was talking about this because I remember talking about John. I was like, you know, Nolan's movies are good, but my God, we wish he would hire Zack Snyder to come in and direct his action scenes.
Yeah.
And I remember Zack got a big kick out of it. He
yeah.
loved it.
Because
that's why I was like, and that's, well, number one, that man loved to talk Watchmen.
Yeah. As he should.
As everybody
as
love
really Watchmen. Should.
That's another movie that I'm always so disappointed that people don't like as much as
oh,
us. Because
like
I
people
love
on
Watchmen.
The internet don't like it.
Everyday people... I can understand, like, when my mom goes and sees that movie, she has no idea.
Oh, yeah, my mom hated Watchmen.
She hated Watchmen. Not really a mom.
No,
movie.
It really
what I'm
isn't.
Saying.
It really isn't.
No.
But
even
love
movie
Watchmen.
Go, me, people
yeah.
who work in my industry are like, ugh, I don't like it. But those are, you know, those are crew people. They're
yeah.
not the creative type. And I was like, oh, how can something that's possibly the greatest comic book series ever written by every critic It's even in like just regular top 10 people's lists.
Yeah.
As far as like reading material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yet that thing is frame for frame what is taking from the comic book. The casting is probably one of the greatest all around. Oh, yeah. Everybody is spot on. Next to the Star Trek remakes, it's pretty much some of the best casting done.
Yeah.
And yet everybody's like, oh, this is awful. This is awful. It's like, no. No.
I love it.
But that could be a whole number two.
Yeah, I was going to say, here we are basically, this is the opinion thing again.
We're,
love Watchmen.
Well, we haven't brought up any Marvel movies in a while, so.
Hey, that's DC.
I know, but
yeah,
that's what I'm
saying. See?
So we're okay. We've been on Superman the entire time.
Can't call us Marvel fanboys now, can you?
No, I love DC
when it's done right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just Marvel does it. It just isn't a lot more.
All right, so back to Man of Steel. The fight scene ends in Smallville when Zod's mask gets broken off, and that's when he kind of really gets the big, breathes in the atmosphere.
Yes.
He starts seeing the X-ray vision. He starts hearing the loud sounds. It goes kind of back to that same scene of Clark when he was a kid, and it's freaking Zod out. He doesn't know what's going on. He's disoriented. He falls down to his knees, and Clark kind of makes that comment, the same thing his mom said to him. You know, I've learned to hone my senses. You know, you gotta
let me
focus.
Spill to you what could cure you.
Yeah, right. Basically, gave Zod the cure for
but
it.
But I don't even get a punch in too. It's like let me do a little talk about this.
So they rush Zod off. They get him back up to the ship because he's freaking out. And Feora and the big giant Kryptonian, whose name I don't know, stick around for
it's
one.
Not non.
Yeah, he sticks around for another quick fight.
Right.
Where Superman basically gets the upper hand on them, and what happened here? Did they just
leave?
They
didn't get an upper hand. They were beating the crap out of them, but they kept on bombing the city.
Yeah.
Just bombing it. Apparently, here's a newsflash, since this is such a groundbreaking humanity film. If something happens in your town, the government will not hesitate to destroy it.
Oh, that's right. Even
though they know it's not going to do anything. Yeah. They've been doing it twice already. Nothing's happened.
So, yeah, they're just shooting missiles. So, yeah, I didn't like that either.
Be
like,
ready, people.
Every time Christopher Maloney grabbed a different gun, I laughed. I was like, this machine gun doesn't work.
Maybe
this pistol will.
Maybe this pocket knife that I pull out is going to stop her. But I'm a warrior.
But then we get that scene, too, where, you know, like the evil Kryptonians are gone. Superman's the only one left there. The military is all kind of standing around him, not really sure what to do. Should we try to get this guy? Should we take him in? And this is when Colonel Hardy steps up and says, this man's not our enemy.
Yeah.
Which, again, they try to make a big reveal because they do the whole foot stepping out and the cape swooping trailer shot, which is great, but it's like, we've already seen him in this. This is nothing special for me to see this.
Yeah.
And yes, I know the army's going to side with him. We all know that. This is you try to make that a big reveal, that's the wrong place to make a big reveal. We already know that's going to happen.
Right.
So it's just...
All right.
And that leads up to another one of my least favorite scenes of the movie.
What's the next scene?
Far too many.
Well,
when he goes back and he's talking to Ma Kent, and Lois comes screeching up to the Kent house in a police car.
Yep.
And gets out with what Superman. Superman in full suit talking to Martha Kent,
on
who this small-town cop undoubtedly knows.
Yeah.
Right.
And Lois gets out and runs up screaming, Clark! Hey, Clark!
Yep.
Clark!
Get in that cop car. Take me to Clark's house.
Yeah.
Yep.
Apparently, when a cop goes and picks up a civilian out of an explosion, the first place he's going to take her is Clark's house. No, probably going to take her to the hospital.
Yeah, but it just goes to one of those things where, like, you can sell me on Lois knowing the entire time. You know, the world we live in now is not the world of the 30s when you could get away with the secret identity thing.
Yeah.
I'm still fine with them doing the secret identity thing with Lois, but I'm also fine with them not whatever. You can sell me that idea.
Well,
you can't sell me the idea that the rest of the world hasn't figured this out.
Yeah.
And you can't sell me on the whole idea of every single lesson he's been taught by his father, and even to his father's death, is you have to keep this, you have to keep an identity.
Yeah.
But apparently after he dies, it's like...
Yep, everybody can know now.
Everybody can know. I'll let everybody know.
Like, Pete, I'm pretty sure, recognized him.
Yep.
Yeah, looked right at him.
Lois told as many people as she could, practically.
Yeah.
And like I said, if nothing else, if you want to pretend to ignore all the rest of that stuff, there's absolutely no way that cop who knows the people in his small town didn't look up and go, hey, the Kent kid is an alien.
Right, yeah.
Weird. And as small of a town as Smallville, Kansas is, pretty sure they still have the internet.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to post somebody's
going to know. Yep.
Yeah. And we zipped over my other nitpick with the when he first gets back to Smallville. He's hitchhiking again.
Yep. That's the one.
I have to get that one out.
Yeah, because that's the one where Ryan was like...
And he's even got the suit.
Like, he could fly now. Why is he hitchhiking? He could have just flown there. Yeah.
It's like, no, once he got in America, he's like, I'm too far. that whole thing around the space really wore
me
out.
Did he hitchhike from the North Pole?
No, because he was already flying by then. Then he just pops in regular clothes. Apparently he had a sack of clothes with him, too.
All right, so the next scene is back up on Zod's ship where he's up there and the Kryptonian German doctor says, I got his blood. Guess what, guys? The Codex is inside of Clark. Mind blown. And so Zod's like, well... does he have to be alive to get the Codex? And he's like, nope, we can kill him. So Zod's like, all right, it's on now. It's on. We're going to kill Clark and everybody, and that's it. So now Zod's plan is to release the world machine. They're going to drop it down to Earth. They're going to turn Earth into the new Krypton, and he's going to kill Clark, and they're going to get that Codex. That's Zod's plan now. So that starts. World machine's launched. what is it? It flies around to the opposite end of the world, clamps on, starts zapping in. And it comes out the other side, which is right in Metropolis, and it's going between what? The ship and their world machine.
Yeah.
It's basically what they're doing is they're terraforming the planet now. They're trying to change the atmosphere. They're making it more like
that's Krypton. What I would do once I found out I had superpowers on a planet. It's like, nope, tired of this.
But he's supposed to rebuild Krypton.
He's bred to do that.
That's what he's bred to do.
He's bred to do it.
Nope,
it's
don't
in
buy it.
Okay.
Is another question I'm going to ask because maybe it's just something I missed. Why did that happen to be in Metropolis? Did they really have any connection to Metropolis at that time?
No, because
wanted to attack Clark's people. Shouldn't they just have done it over his mom's house?
I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea why.
But this brings us to Metropolis, which I'm fine with.
Yeah, so, I think
transition.
This is fanboy. I know, but yeah.
So this thing starts zapping through the planet. It's coming up right through Metropolis, and immediately buildings are toppling right here. So here comes the massive destruction. And I really, really hate to make this reference, but we are living in a post 9/11 world. We've seen what it's like when buildings actually do topple over in a city. And right here, in this first scene, we see, like, four buildings. Boom! Fall down. Skyscraper buildings. I mean, like, it's pile of rubble. This greater radius is growing and growing in Metropolis, where there used to be buildings and people, and now it's nothing.
There's no more
people. Now it's nothing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of those things where you're just like, all right, here we go again with this whole, you're trying to ground the story into reality.
Yep.
And now you are leveling an entire city where people are living and people are working.
Yeah.
And you're telling, like, I'm just supposed to be okay with this?
Yeah. And
how
many people live in New York?
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know.
Like, that's an honest question.
Yeah, I mean, don't
it's
know.
It's millions, right?
Yeah, it's clearly millions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're modeling this you know, city of the future after one of our biggest cities, so you're going to assume there's 5 million people in this place. They destroy half of it.
At least, absolutely.
You know, and again, like I can deal with collateral damage, and if half the city has to get leveled, but at some point, shouldn't Clark care?
Yeah, that's the big problem here. And now I understand. Like, okay, the plan they come up with at this point is Clark says, "Look, we've got this thing that Jor-El helped us make that will send them back to the Phantom Zone." So what we need to do is we need to get this shot at their ship to get rid of them. But somebody's also got to go stop the world machine. And since I'm the only one that can get there fast enough, that's going to have to be me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of – he can't be everywhere, I guess. And Superman, I mean, I know that's one of his biggest – Superman wants to be everywhere and he can't be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the greater –
but
downfalls of the character.
But they don't display this as the conflict.
They don't.
The conflict isn't, God, I have to save everyone and I can't save everyone. What do I do? The conflict is simply, well, I can't do this one, so I'm going to go do that one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's just off.
Yeah. So he flies down to the southern pole of the world or wherever, the opposite side. Yeah, the opposite side of Metropolis.
Nobody around.
Yeah. and he's going to go fight the world machine to try to stop it, while Lois and the military are going to try to shoot this missile thing up at Zod's ship to send them back to the Phantom Zone. So we get this scene, basically, where this whole scene right here is nothing but destruction. We just keep watching Metropolis fall more and more. Mm-hmm. We're seeing the employees of the Daily Planet caught in the rubble. Was it? It's Jenny now, right?
Yeah, Jenny
Olsen, not Jenny. Yep. Not Jimmy.
Perry White's black, and
yep. And Jimmy Olsen's a girl.
Ooh,
yep.
We're flipping it.
Yep. Right.
We're making this modern.
Yep. Yep.
We're gonna take these characters that really don't matter.
Yep. So yeah, Jenny Olsen's trapped under a bunch of rubble from a building that fell down, and yeah. Perry's trying to
and
save.
The sleazy reporter, yep, have to try to save her.
So this is what we're getting going on right now, and we're just watching Metropolis just fall. I mean, there is no way this isn't happening without killing tons and tons of people. Like, people have to be dying everywhere. Yeah. This is horrific.
2 million people died.
This is horrific.
And I'm not going to buy, well, I knew it was coming, so they evacuated. Nope. Seen evacuations.
Yeah, and
it's not how it works.
It's weird because, like, I really want to, like, when I go into a superhero movie, I like to turn my brain off and enjoy the action.
Yes.
It is really hard not to just go, but what about all the people when you're watching this scene?
That is
all I can think of. Like, I can't get past the amount of destruction in this scene.
And again, if at any point in the movie someone would have just said, but what about all the people?
Yeah.
You know? Then I would have went, oh no, the people.
Yeah.
They care about them, but they're dying. Yeah. Oh no.
I mean, you see
them
running through the streets. And this scene, obviously, is going to go, and I'm going to compare it, and I know I shouldn't compare it, but I have to compare it to the Avengers and battle scene, because obviously it's the same thing. Alien invasion, New York, bam. But what is, at least the characters have the sense of, hey, there's people around.
Yes.
We still need to save people and fight these things at the same time.
Yeah.
You don't get that at all.
Yeah.
You get a weird scene of Superman flying to the Indian Ocean, fighting the world machine that apparently sprouts Doc Ock arms out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because apparently because number one is they're supposed to be a peacekeeping people, but yet their world machine has big weapons on it to prevent people from stopping it, basically saying, if you're on a different world, we're going to take you over.
Yeah.
We have a machine that's going to defend
itself
if you even try to mess with it.
Right.
And they'll totally wear Doc Ock arms.
Which, no. Leave that thing alone. Have some Kryptonians fly down and him fight off Kryptonians before he does that. You have an army of them in the ship.
Yeah.
Have that be like, oh, Superman's flying over there. Go stop him before he
hits. Go stop him. Yeah, and then he can fight those.
I got to see a weird alien.
Or, you know, have a couple of Kryptonians piloting that ship.
Yeah.
That try to stop him.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
That's all I needed. And I'm okay with him going to stop that, because that's the main world engine that he has to stop before anything happens. But they never explained to me why they need to stop the world engine before they can send the other ship back to the Phantom Zone.
I don't know.
They needed to say, well, why don't we just... I know, once again, it's after the fact type stuff. And I know that people don't sit around and looking at the script being like, oh, we got to figure out every single thing that could go wrong with this scene and people are going to nitpick about. But why couldn't they just done it, bam? Why did they have to wait for the world machine to stop before they could send that shit back to the Bam Zone?
I don't know. It's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
I kind of got an impression, and again, I don't know where I got this, but I kind of just got an impression that, like, the other ship that was in Metropolis was... You know, the world machine's generating all this power,
and that's
like the receptacle for it.
That's true.
So I
kind
of got this impression that even if they send them back to the Phantom Zone,
that thing
this
is still
giant
be going.
Beam of energy is still going through, and it's got no receptacle. So now we don't even know what it's doing.
Maybe
we
that's
just
it.
Know
there
what
you
it's
go.
Doing.
You're fine with that.
Yep,
I'm
I'll
okay
take
with
it.
That.
I'll take it. So Clark succeeds. He destroys the world machine on that end, which gives the military folks a chance to shoot the missile at the Kryptonian ship. But they almost get stopped, because this is the scene where Feyora bursts in. Mm-hmm. She starts throwing guys out the airplanes, you know. She's going to stop this thing from getting launched out. And this is where we get to see Colonel Hardy be the hero of the whole movie, because he sacrifices himself. And he dies.
He stretch his arms out.
Nope. He sacrifices himself by flying the plane right into their ship, kills himself, but at the same time is able to ignite this thing.
He gets off that awesome one-liner.
Yep, that's right. Mm-hmm. He shoots off that awesome one-liner at Feyora, which is the same thing she said to him earlier. That's what I'm saying. He was portrayed more as a hero in this scene than anybody else.
Yeah.
Like, he was the hero. He saved Metropolis right here. He flew that plane into that ship. Everybody gets sucked back into the Phantom Zone. So they're all gone now.
Lois conveniently falls out.
Clark gets right back to Metropolis just in time to save her. We get the flying scene where, you know, the famous Superman carrying Lois scene, which they got that in there. That's
and
cool.
And then they got the him on the Zod ship destroying it, basically knowing that he's destroying
it. Oh, yeah. He got back in time. Because they even do that bit. Zod comes flying in Clark's
in the
ship.
Fortress.
In the fortress ship.
Yeah,
and comes zooming in and almost shoots that plane that's carrying the Phantom Zone bomb back.
That's right, and Superman
Clark
flies through it
and is about to heat vision it in half. And Zod, you know, like, you know, if you do this, you were destroying Krypton. And Clark chooses Earth right then.
He says Krypton had its chance.
And he zaps that thing in half.
That's right. Again,
at no point have they given me an indication that Clark has a reason to like Earth.
Or even like Krypton. I don't know why he likes anybody in this movie.
So it's like, it felt like that's another scene that should have been powerful and inspiring and very Superman, but it just felt empty.
It was more powerful for Zod. Because you actually almost see a little vulnerability. Almost like he's about to cry.
Oh, he freaks out, though. Yeah, because when Superman ends it, I mean, that's just, it's over for Zod. Yeah. Like, he just watched everything, and then all his people just got sucked back to the Phantom Zone.
And then you see the scene with Zod on Earth being like, this could have been Krypton.
Right.
You have destroyed it. So you really see more humanity in Zod than you ever do in Superman.
Yeah, you really do. Well, just before that scene, though, this is where also Superman and Lois land in Metropolis. And this part right here is where it just really registers with you how much of Metropolis is gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They land in the center where the ship was zapping in Metropolis, and they are standing on a pile of rubble. It is just, I mean, like, it's not even big chunks of rubble. No. It's dust.
Yeah.
They are standing on this giant
dust of human
circle
bones.
Of dust, and they're embracing, and they're so happy to be together,
and we get,
while they're standing on top of dead people everywhere.
Yeah.
And
we get a forced kiss.
Yeah, and they kiss.
It just seems not.
And it all goes down from here, she says to him. It all goes downhill after the first kiss. And it's just like that whole scene
downhill
right there.
For a while, sweetheart.
Yeah. So that whole scene, I'm just like, again, do you not see what's around you? There's no registering of it. Yeah. It's Superman should be crushed right now that this just happened to the city.
He caused it.
He brought these people here.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you never get that sense of it weighs on him.
Well, and then here comes the Zod fight.
And this is the Zod fight.
And this is, like you said, I mean, you get so much more humanity out of Zod than because he actually cares about his people.
Yeah. Yes.
Clark doesn't care about his people or the other people or anybody's people. Yeah.
So Superman's more lost now than he was at the beginning
of the movie.
So Zod gives his speech, you know, this could have been Krypton.
Yeah.
This could have been a new beginning for us. My only reason to live is to protect Krypton, and now there's nothing left for me to protect.
Yeah.
So,
how does he say it? He's like, my entire reason for being was to protect my people.
Yeah.
And now I have no people.
You've taken my soul away from me.
Yeah.
Which is showing
more humanity than Superman ever.
Yeah.
So apparently, Ma, Pa, Kent, and Jor-El are the worst parents of all time.
Yeah.
Because the whole
Jor-El
tried.
Jor-El tried,
just showed up 30 years late.
Ma tried, too. It's all at Jonathan Kent's fault. Yeah.
This version of Jonathan Kent is just the worst.
So, Zod's done, dude. He just doesn't care anymore. Now he just he's gonna kill Clark.
And we get it.
He's gonna kill Superman.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is where we get into the big giant fight between these two. And this is cool because now we get to see this big superpowered fight, a real fight between Superman and Zod now. This is kind of the first time we've really seen these two go to blows with each other. And they do slam into buildings and stuff, but really the most of the damage is done already by this point in Metropolis.
Well, but they're not, they're not just slamming, Clark is chucking him at buildings.
Yeah.
The ones that are still standing.
With probably people in them.
Yeah, with tons of people in them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, there's one still up, let's knock it over.
Yeah.
And this is where, this is kind of where the whole scene really, really hit me. Because I think the first time through, I had sort of ignored all the damage as just collateral damage. I wasn't putting that thought into it until I'm seeing them flying around just aiming at buildings like that. And all I can relate it back to is Superman 2 and the tremendous amount of humanity missing out of this movie. Because if you'll remember, I mean, there was a lot of destruction in Superman 2. It was a 70s budget destruction.
Right.
So it was nothing like this, but... No. I mean, they didn't hit a building without pointing out that, hey, rubble's falling on people, you know? And Clark's whole... His concentration during that whole fight in Superman 2 was, you know, Zod, the people.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to get the fight away from the people. And he would stop fighting Zod and the other two Kryptonians to go and save some people.
And that's where they find out.
You know, and that's where you know, like, he is humanity's protector. He is here to help us. To save us.
And it is a weakness
to be exploited.
That's supposed
and
to be
because you don't get that at all.
No. But you don't get that here at all. No, it's like, well, I'll go kill these people. All right, I'll kill some too.
Yeah.
Whatever, let's fight.
Exactly. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole, and then that was the whole thing, was... He even says that line. He's like, I'm going to kill every last... Zod's like, I'm going to kill every last one of them. And I'm going to start with you. And he's like, you're a monster. I'm going to stop you. Not really. I'm going to help you out, Zod, by throwing you through these buildings.
Yeah. All right. So they fight. They break a bunch of things. This is where we get to the scene. Okay, well, first of all, Zod learns to fly.
Apparently Metropolis has the worst... architectural infrastructure of all time.
That's true too. These
because
buildings
apparently just going through one floor of a building and it falls over.
Yep. Yeah.
Once again, I will go back to Avengers. Hulk and those things go through buildings all the time. No building toppled.
Right.
Because those buildings are meant to withstand some damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And again, I will also point out too, like going back to the Avengers example, like we're not trying to super duper nitpick every little bit of this stuff.
Right.
The things you miss. Because the Avengers, there was all that destruction. And we talked about this very thing at the beginning of this podcast when we were talking about it. There's tons of that city destruction. There are probably people dying.
Mm-hmm.
But you're allowed to ignore that because they point it out to you.
Yes.
They stop and go, look, here's some people. Let's help them.
Do you remember?
Here's a building full of people. Let's try to save it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
If you do that once in a while, you can knock down city blocks and know that it's somewhere in the spirit
there's
of the
consequences.
Film in the back of the movie.
You have to know that there's consequences somewhere.
There was none
whatsoever. And one of the scene that really stands out to me about Avengers is there's a whole sequence where Captain America's only focus is creating a perimeter and getting these people to safety, and that's all I'm going to focus on doing.
Exactly.
And we don't get that with Superman at all.
Yeah. If once here Superman would have stopped and said, you know, like, all these people are in danger, and helped one small group of them, I could have ignored every other bit of this scene for the most part. But they never give you that bit that you need.
No.
Yeah, they don't give you any sense of consequences whatsoever. Yeah. Like, they're ignoring the fact that all these people are you know, being doomed. They're being killed right here by Zod and everybody.
And you don't see it until you get to the climax.
And then you get to this scene, which is what we're going to talk about now. So this is the scene where Zod's basically been experimenting with all his powers through this fight. He figured out the flight. He goes a little gaga crazy with his laser eye beams here at the end.
Yeah.
And this is the part where he's just like, I'm just going to start frying all these people. And they're in like this, it's a subway kind of
Not
this,
all these people.
The train station, right?
Just these four idiots who decided to corner them.
Yep, he corners these four people and he starts shooting towards them. And Superman grabs his head and he stops him. And Superman's like, don't do this. You know, you can't do this. And Zod's not stopping. And this brings us to the climax of the film, where Superman snaps Zod's neck and kills him dead.
Snaps
his neck.
Yeah.
Now, this is a scene that I have a lot of issue with. Because I just watched Superman, the world's first superhero, the biggest Boy Scout of them all, snap a man's neck.
Mm-hmm. Murderer guy.
He murdered this man. Now, he was... trying to save people. I understand they were trying to portray he had no choice. It was kill Zod or Zod kills all these people.
Right.
Fine.
This is him choosing us.
He chose us over Zod. I get the message that they're trying to send. I have real issue with Superman killing somebody. Yep.
Yeah.
Superman does not kill. I'm sorry. And it's been pointed out to me that Superman killed Zod in the comics. Okay, fine. Whatever.
In the comics?
He's killed Zod in the comics.
Yeah, but the comics have been around so long, you gotta come up with stuff.
I just don't like it. I still don't like it. And you can tell me that this has happened before all you want to. I have real issue with Superman killing anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody.
That
shouldn't be our introduction to Superman.
No, absolutely not. And that's one thing I said to you when we watched it the first time. My first thought when that ended was, well, if the first time we ever see Superman, the entire city of Metropolis gets leveled and he kills Zod, what the hell are we supposed to do when Doomsday shows up?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a Doomsday-worthy fight there, okay?
Yeah. Well,
Zod's the first... Yeah, where do you go from that? That's
the first battle? They painted themselves in a corner with it being like, okay, well, anything to get him back to a Phantom Zone is gone. And I've destroyed the ship that... Well, actually, I didn't even destroy it. See, that's the thing. I would have. I'm not like completely against the killing. If they would have shown me, if they would have done the whole point of showing his humanity of him choose why he cares so much about humans.
Yeah.
I don't know why these four people in a corner all of a sudden he changes his mind. He's like, oh, these. Yeah. I have to stop you from killing people.
And that was the deal that I had, because this is where we get back to that, you know, being on set as the extra, this is the final battle that I saw.
Right.
So, two Septembers ago, I knew he was going to kill Zod.
Yeah.
And I am, as you pointed out, a pretty big Superman fan, you know.
Right.
Like, I was into comics for several years, it's been a long time, but I read all of them I could find, you know, I've seen all the movies. I've probably seen the first two 30 times a piece at least, you know. Like, I know a decent amount about Superman, and I know he doesn't generally kill people. And that should have really bothered me. But I had enough faith and excitement into the production that I went, well, if the point is that they're driving him to that no-win situation, you know, Snyder's going to do this well, I've got nothing but faith in him, it's going to make sense, everything's going to be fine. I'll deal with it. It'll be okay.
Right.
And I didn't worry about it at all, you know. And that should have been a huge point of contention right there, just knowing that it happened without seeing the circumstances. But I went, well, they'll explain it. And once they explain it, I'll be able to take it, you know, and we'll run with it. And then I watch the movie and I go, no, they didn't explain it. They didn't set it up.
They didn't set
him up. Yeah, they didn't build him as our protector. They didn't give him a reason to be our protector. They told me... Well, you chose Earth over Krypton. You know, like, they say that out loud, but saying it out loud and showing me the repercussions of these decisions are two different things. He had just spent a half an hour wantonly destroying city blocks with Zod.
Right.
You know, and not giving a crap about any of the people in them, near them, the people the buildings were falling on, pretty much anybody but Lois.
Yeah.
He didn't care about any of them.
Yep.
Then, all of a sudden, when they come crashing through this building, probably killing 15 more people on the way in...
right.
...with the falling debris, you know, they land, and, you know, these four people in a corner are about to get killed, and now, all of a sudden, it's that no-win situation, and I care so much about these people that I have to do this. It just didn't have, like I said, you can tell me what's happening... And I can accept that that's what you meant, but if you want to make a good movie, you got to make me feel that.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Right. You didn't feel anything for him.
I'll also point out that he snapped his neck to the right in the process cutting those people in half.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his head totally would have snapped that way with the lasers. Yeah. You're right.
I would have liked it better, obviously, if maybe he put his hands over his eyes and forced the beams back into his head. Not killing him, but at least... destroying his eyes and maybe knocking him out.
Yeah.
And then be a scene being like, well, how do we do this?
Yeah.
How do we get rid of Zod? Well, and just being like, I went back to the ship and figured out a way to put him back in this Phantom Zone. Okay, who knows?
Anything they could have done. Yeah. And Zod even said at the beginning of that fight,
it's gonna be
I'm going to die or you're going to die. Yeah. That's the only way this is going to end.
Right, so you knew it was coming.
And so you knew that's what they were building to, but that goes back to something you said, I think, earlier, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just give me a line or two of dialogue and assume everything's fixed.
Yeah.
You know, that cannot be an emotion that you
I would have liked to see a scene with him and Jor-El
because like you know you get a sense that Jor-El knows that Zod's bad and everything, but he I think they needed to get a little bit more of him being like, listen, Clark, Zod is dangerous. If there comes a point when you have to do what you must, I needed something like that. Yeah. Being like, oh, we're foreshadowing it. We know what's going to happen.
Right.
But is he ready to make that commitment to humanity?
They have to build it, and it falls right back into all those missed reveals.
All of the things
that should have been big in this movie that should have made you feel something
were
just glossed over.
Everything,
it's just assumed
everything
you're
going
to feel
fast
something.
Right.
Everything was cliff noted. It was just pounded. Yeah. Here's the point,
because it's a terribly long movie.
That's what I thought too. I felt like it ended, and I was just like, that was
but
like
the whole.
It was so long, but I felt like nothing happened.
Exactly.
Except for explosions.
Yeah, because the scenes are so fast.
Well,
that's because, once again, that goes back to
it was like they had one thing in mind because they're like, okay, well, why didn't Superman Returns work? Well, everybody wanted to see big fights. Everybody wanted to see this. Well. We're just going to do that.
That's what I thought, too.
And then
too.
We'll build a story
That's
around
what I
that.
Said, too. I felt like they overdid it.
You
like,
overdid that.
Like, they were like, okay, people wanted more action out of Superman Returns, so let's give them, like, all the action. Everything we can possibly cram into
let's
this.
Forget
let's
about
it.
The story.
And it was overkill.
Let's forget about the characters.
Yep.
Which John and I were discussing. I don't know if we were discussed, but I mentioned when we were watching it last time when I was talking about how everybody wants to talk about, oh, but the fights and everything looks great and it looks fantastic as far as, like, everything's exploding stuff. I'm like, well, yeah, but in 20 years, these special effects are going to look really crappy compared to what we're going to have in the future. And I'm not going to go back and watch a movie for crappy special effects.
Yeah.
Do I go back to watch Superman, the movie, watching him run Hulkly against... the train? No, I still enjoy it, but that's not the reason I watch that movie. Yeah. I watch it because it's a good character
movie. Heart.
It has heart.
And that's
feel for him. And that was our big problem with this movie. It was the whole end game was he's supposed to be human. He chooses to be human. Yet throughout the whole movie, you do not show me why, and you don't show me the human side of it. No heart to this film.
That's...
You never get a sense of Clark. Is he human? It's like, no, Clark's still lost, it seems to me.
Yeah.
He's still lost between being... Because he does obviously doesn't want to be like Kryptonians, because they're obviously bad guys.
Right.
And he really doesn't even want to be human, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he's almost forced to do everything, which is like, okay, well, this is teetering on... This is the type of mentality where a person goes bad. And it goes back to the Marvel, because I just watched Thor. It goes back to the Loki situation, where he's... In that movie, he's supposed to be a frost giant and... an Asgardian, and he's supposed to be that bridge between those worlds. Yet, when you're supposed to be that person, if you're not guided right, it always seems like you go bad.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't get no guidance in this movie whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it seems like, oh, we're hinting that Superman's probably going to be a bad guy at some point. He won't be, but I'm... That's how I reveal it, because they never showed me a point where it's like... You take that for granted of, oh, he's just good.
Exactly, and that's they took everything for granted.
Everything for granted.
They just assumed you know what they were going for.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go with what they're going for. Yeah. You're going to accept all this stuff, but they don't take the time to actually.
Because it seems like the only people he cares about is Lois and Martha. Well, what if Lois gets robbed and somebody kills her? This Superman's probably going to go out and kill that guy who killed Lois. Because that seems like the only things he cares about.
Right.
He doesn't care about humanity. He cares about a couple humans.
I read an interview with Goyer, I think it was, who was talking about... Because there's been some obvious backlash over him killing Zod the way he did.
Right, right.
And the interview was like, well, the whole point kind of is that he gets driven to this, you know, no-win situation, and there's no other alternatives, which, A, no, he didn't. But they're telling us it again, you know?
Right?
But that's he's like, well, the whole point is he gets driven to this no win situation, so he has to do this, and this is what the fact that he killed the last Kryptonian and he destroyed the last of his people, that's what makes it where in the future he'll never kill again because of that wand. And I'm like, whoa, you're already backtracking,
because
that was not your
intent. Is that the sense I got?
Yeah.
Did anybody ever think that?
Yeah,
right.
You already know you've
and
messed
I
up.
Hate that when it's like it's a no choice. He has no choice. It's like no. The whole point is he's supposed to choose.
He's supposed to have a choice.
The whole
apparently, the whole
point is that Superman has never had a choice.
Yeah,
it's the other choice.
It's the other choice.
Yeah,
he's forced into everything.
You know, yeah.
yeah,
everything he's done throughout his life, he is forced into.
All right.
Not a fan.
Okay, so this is going to bring us to the ending scene of the film. We're going to get this scene where Clark is back talking to Ma Kent. Basically, you know, she's like, well, what are you going to do now?
After he shoots down that drone, right? Talks to the army guy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because there's this scene.
Horrible transition.
Oh, man. Yeah, the scene where this drone is apparently just trying to track down where Superman's hiding, and he shoots it down, and he's like, look, guys, don't worry about me. Don't come find me. I'm not going to let you
not
find
me. Not caring a damn about the taxpayers, because he'll destroy a $12 million
there's,
drone.
There's Ryan's logic.
That's what the colonel or whatever he would. He goes, are you effing stupid?
Yeah, that was hilarious.
You know, he's like, you know how much that thing costs or whatever?
I don't care.
Clark's just like,
you
whatever.
Should care. Your mom pays taxes too, buddy.
Well, because he was in a no-win situation with that drone.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what it was? Kill or be killed.
Oh, yeah. He'll never kill another drone again.
Yeah.
Not after that one.
Yeah, he's figured it out.
He couldn't have just stopped it. Put it down.
Because we're not in debt.
Yeah.
Also, we can afford a whole bunch of
also,
drones.
Also, do military generals generally just drive around after the drones?
No.
Like, it's up in the air. Let's follow it.
Follow
it. Where it's going.
It's going to take us right to him.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, but they shoot, you know, he shoots it down and he comes down and he says, you know, like you said, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm look, I'm here to help, but don't
on my own terms.
It's going to be on my plan and you know, that's going to be cool. And then for whatever reason, Green Lantern's girlfriend is sitting there all giddy.
Yeah, by the way, that's Ferris. I didn't realize that cuz they didn't call her that in the movie, but afterwards I found out that they're calling her Carrie Ferris and that's not Carol Ferris.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But so maybe it's going to be a different character, but why would you do that?
Again, DC's misguided attempt at joining universes.
Yes,
well,
it is.
Well, we put the Wayne Tech logo on a satellite.
Yes.
And if we put a Green Lantern character's name on one of our ambiguous characters for no reason.
Yeah.
Then it'll be sort of like we're building a universe.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
So then we get the scene where he's talking to Ma Kent, basically. She's asking him what he's gonna do, and he's like, well, I need to get a job where I can, you know, keep my ear to the ground so I know when bad things are happening, but people won't, like, second guess me being in these places because, you know, I'm a reporter. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna be a reporter for the Daily Planet. And, you know, that's where this is where they kind of tease the whole Clark Kent secret identity thing. Mm-hmm. Totally, you know, ignoring the fact that all kinds of people saw Clark Kent throughout this whole movie. But then we get the whole scene at the end where he puts on the glasses, he's wearing the suit, he's at the Daily Planet. Metropolis looks okay, which is surprising.
Yeah,
like
everybody's built quickly.
Everybody's upbeat and happy and not worried about half the city being gone, so that's cool. He just, you know, first time he ever has a job, he gets to walk right into a reporter position at the Daily Planet, so that's nice. Here we are. We're nitpicking again at that, but, you know, that's just funny stuff.
Being introduced by the editor of the newspaper. Apparently that's what he does, is show around interns.
It goes right back to that whole World of Reality thing.
Yes.
What's this guy's work history? Well, he was a hobo for a couple of years. He did a lot of grifting.
Oh,
apparently he's really good at forging.
Can he write anything? Well, he hasn't ever, but why don't we just have the best reporter in the city teach him?
Yeah.
That'll be the first person we introduce him to is Lois Lane, and she can show him the ropes.
Yep. And then we get the sense that Lois knows exactly who it is, but she's going to keep his secret secret. And nobody else knows who he is apparently now. But so now they're going to do the secret identity thing with him. They're going to do the Clark Kent Superman. At least that's what they're leading us to believe is what's going to happen. And now everything is as we know it. That's the way the movie ends. Now it's Clark Kent. He's Superman. He's going to be a hero now. The end of the movie. Here we are.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's Man of Steel. So we just spent 2 hours. We did tear this movie up. Like we nitpicked the crap out of this movie. But I need to go back to what we said in the beginning. None of us hated this movie.
No, we did not hate this movie.
As much nitpicking as we did, we did not hate it because we were told.
That's why.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't have said anything about this movie, they wouldn't have come out and say, "Hey, this is the movie we're making. This is what we're doing. This is how we." Because that was the whole thing, because everybody's like, oh, is there going to be kryptonite in this movie? And it's like, no, there's not. His kryptonite is his humanity and how much he feels for humans. And I was like getting a sense of, okay, well, there's going to be a lot of danger. And he's going to be he's going to be the classic Boy Scout. He's going to be the classic savior. None of it.
Nope. Yeah. Yeah, that's
it was an explosion orgy.
Right, yeah.
And that's,
yeah.
There's a lot of fear coming out of this movie into what the future is going to hold because DC clearly still doesn't get it. However, if you just look at the actual build from it, and if you look at this as some sort of like, you know, like zero issue or pre-episode or whatever, mm-hmm. you can walk right into a Superman movie in a sequel that, you know, he works at the Daily Planet, he's got the secret identity right. thing going, him and Lois have the, I mean, you know, they know, which I'm fine with, like I said,
I'm
they
fine
got
with
that
too.
Little thing going,
yeah.
he's already Earth's protector, you can ignore everything that happened in this movie.
True.
And walk right into a sequel that's terrific. And you've got so many elements that are going well for you, because there was a lot of stuff to like about the movie at certain points, too.
Yes.
There just
yes.
wasn't enough time and characterization put into the right things. So if you learn from the mistakes of this movie and do the same thing, just better, mm-hmm. for a sequel, you can have an amazing Superman movie. You can have the one that this one was supposed to be. So there's still a lot of hope there, at least. And again, there's, you know, there's many things that it did well enough.
Right.
You know, it's just got these fixes it's got to do. So it's not a terrible movie.
No.
It's just not a great Superman movie.
Right. No. I just don't think it was the right starting point.
Yeah.
They didn't build Superman the right way
yeah.
for us. And what Ryan said about it lacking heart, I think that's just that's it right there. That's the key thing that this movie was missing was heart.
Yep.
Like we talked about in that flying scene, that was the only moment of joy you really felt in this movie. Otherwise, the rest of the movie was death and destruction
yeah.
and depression.
Yep.
And there was no... You didn't leave this movie feeling hyped up and energetic and excited like you're supposed to feel when you
exactly,
leave a superhero
yeah.
movie.
Yeah,
Superman
you know?
Is big and flashy. Yeah. He's bright blue. He's a Boy Scout.
He's patriotic.
Yeah.
He's all American.
He's overly good.
Right.
You know, he's that kind of character. And they really did. They did a Superman Begins. They
yeah.
tried to make him
yep.
dark and brooding.
Yes,
and he has this past and all this stuff
keep,
that's made him.
Keep
that
Batman
way.
And Superman
and,
separate,
yeah,
guys.
Not,
they
yeah.
are opposite
yeah.
characters.
Yeah.
Opposite. Size of the spectrum.
Yeah.
I don't even want to
two.
See the tone in
no.
the same movie.
No,
I
no.
will point. I will point this out too, and this is kind of getting outside of the, just the general movie realm. Like Batman's huge right now, and those movies made a lot of money as far as movies go and everything. Man, Superman's a way bigger character.
Mm-hmm.
He's
he
a way bigger money maker.
No, yeah, he
and
is.
Worldly.
Do, look,
yeah,
he's
world
still.
Yeah, and if you do him right, you know, you know, Batman Begins worked so well because they did Batman right.
Yes.
Not because they did that character in that style of movie. But what they did here is they tried to do that character in that style of movie and just place it over Superman.
Yeah.
Right.
That's not how you do it.
No.
Right.
Do Superman right.
Right.
Yeah.
And
he's
that's
still,
how you make your
exactly.
you know,
he's
yeah.
still DC's number one.
Exactly.
He's still yeah. the number one.
He's
the biggest
he's
guy.
One
I'm pretty
he's
sure he's
yes.
the biggest superhero.
He is.
Next,
yeah.
next
he is.
As I said, next to the crucifix, the S symbol is the most recognizable thing on planet Earth.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you tell me, oh, it's doing, the movie's still making money. This movie should be $1 billion the first
exactly.
weekend.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Especially
and when you tell me, well, Superman, you know, Superman's a little old school. He doesn't fit in this world anymore.
No.
You got to update him. You know, well, there's a lot of T-shirts that say you're wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
I'm wearing one.
Yeah. Comic books, man. Comic books are still going on.
Well, here's
too.
Another
Come
problem
on.
I have.
There's
with
lots
this movie.
Of stories.
It's,
can...
it's not so much of a because everybody. We have to understand it's not just a Superman movie. This was supposed to be the DC movie to kickstart.
Superman
their...
is the first hero. He's
yes.
supposed to be the first superhero.
True.
And him coming out as a hero is what is supposed to spawn the rest of this universe.
Yeah. Exactly.
Creation.
And this is what DC and WB are trying to do with the format, trying to do the Marvel thing.
But they don't
they
get
completely
it.
Missed it.
Yeah.
Cuz not only is this supposed to be a Superman movie, this is supposed to be a DC movie. I'm supposed to get more DC characters from this
yeah,
movie.
Right.
Never just like we said, just because
yeah.
you throw in a Wayne Satellite and a girl's name from a different character doesn't mean.
Yeah, it's not. A
right.
Thing,
do I believe that Green Lantern lives in this universe? No, because guess what? Those people are going to really flip out when they see a
one
guy
the,
in a green suit that's,
yeah,
a,
yeah.
that's
right?
a that's a galaxy
yeah.
police officer.
Well, one of the things I was talking about too with Jonathan about after seeing this is that all of the little hints that were supposed to be to other DC characters in the movie were so subtle that you have to be looking for them to even
you
see them.
You already have to know.
In the Marvel movies, it is in your face.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, they do have some things that are extra little bonuses, like the Infinity Gauntlet in the background of Thor.
Yeah.
That's like an extra bonus.
Yeah.
All that other stuff is like, they don't hide it at all. It's there. You know that this universe is all one world.
DC's been terrible with any other foreshadowing. Yeah. The one thing they did kind of right was the at the end of Batman Begins, they showed the Joker card.
The Joker card.
Which
was
so foreshadowed that. Except even then, it wasn't like, oh, we're building to something. At that point, it was just like, well, we didn't use him in the first one.
We know who's coming to the second one.
If we do a second one, we're going to use a Joker.
But it was still exciting.
But when
I was still like, yeah,
and it was
Joker.
It was super exciting.
Right.
But what Marvel did? I mean, look what it did with Iron Man. Iron Man shouldn't have been that huge of a movie to begin with, and they still even knew then. Well, let's put this thing at the end. I mean, what's the worst case scenario?
Yeah, we'll just
get tanks. And there's a little bit of fanboy excitement.
Right.
Or best case scenario, this movie makes, I don't know, some astronomical amount the first weekend and then keeps going from there. And then maybe we can build on it. And they gave you that Avengers teaser.
Yeah.
And they flat out came out and said it. You know, hey, look, that's Nick Fury and he's talking about the Avengers. That's a tease. What do we get in Superman? Like you said, we get a Wayne Tech logo. We get a LexCorp logo, which is a reference to itself.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Once again.
That's like the Joker
get,
card.
Yeah. We
That's
get, like we the get Joker Green card. Lantern's girlfriend is a low-level... She's a driver for a military
Who thinks
general.
Superman's
you know? And what are you doing with this guy?
Yeah.
You know, either tease us or don't tease us.
Right.
But don't give us this, you know, halfway there stuff that's not really
you're
leading
not building,
to
you're just, yeah.
What you're doing there is digging yourself graves.
Exactly.
Because now you're stuck in this stuff.
Yeah.
Now, while we're on that, this movie has done well. It's made a lot of money. It's made enough to where they said, we're for sure doing a sequel. It's greenlit. The sequel's greenlit. And the plan is that if things keep going strong, they're going to do the Justice League movie after the Superman
sequel.
Already,
they're doing the Justice League.
And then they're supposedly going to build the DC Universe off of the Justice League movie. So they're doing it a little different than Marvel. They're starting with Superman, then Justice League, then everybody else.
That's
because
they don't have faith in their storytelling. Because there's no reason that they can't make a Flash movie. Like John said, if they can make a Thor movie,
they can make a Flash.
Pretty much any movie.
Yeah, no kidding.
Except they already,
no kidding.
They already killed their Flash. The perfect Flash.
Oh yeah,
they took out of the Flash contention by making him the worst Green Lantern.
Yeah.
No kidding.
That's there's some casting. Hey, everybody loves Ryan Reynolds, right?
Hal Jordan.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
But,
that's right.
Can he play serious pilot?
Has anybody?
No, whatever. Do it anyway.
Has he ever led? Has he ever been a lead of a movie? Well, he did that Van Wilder thing 10 years ago.
That's the one that
you're
got
right.
Him. That's what got him the role. That was it. So thinking about a Superman sequel, we've talked about this a little bit already, and you talked about what you'd like to – like how they can create a sequel and almost ignore the first movie because they've got a good Superman movie set up right there. Something I would like to see personally in a sequel is I want there to be consequences for the destruction of Metropolis. I want Superman to feel regret, deep regret, for not being able to save all those people. I want him to feel upset about killing Zod, and maybe that is the reason why he takes up the rule no killing no matter what. And I want to see Lex Luthor now rise up and say, I'm going to rebuild Metropolis.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that guy right there,
he's
the cause of all this.
Yep.
We can't trust him.
Yep.
And now we've got a Luthor story.
Yep.
And that's what I want to see come out of the second movie.
And that could be amazing.
That could be awesome.
Yeah.
And I could, honestly, I can find myself forgiving a lot of the stuff in the first movie if they can pull that off good in the second movie.
You're right.
Then I will feel a lot better about all that stuff.
That's
I saw
how,
in the
that's
first
how,
movie.
That's, I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking that too. I was like, well, maybe this could just be like the first 15 minutes of what the rest of the series could be for
me.
This could just be the backstory.
Yes.
But the thing is man, did they just overdo it?
Oh, they did. It was absolutely
And that's another
overdone.
Thing, too. That's another brilliant thing about the first two Superman movies, Superman the movie and Superman 2, is the fact where I think there came a point where Donner was like, there's too much of this. I can't have Zod and these Kryptonians coming down in the first movie. It's like, that's something that needs to be saved for a little bit later. I need to dive deeper into this. Who is this character?
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
is this Superman? I need to do that.
It is almost like
it's almost like a full movie needs to be
yeah.
an like a complete beginning to end origin of.
Yeah,
he doesn't really show up in the suit till the very end. I'm fine.
Almost. Yeah, they did. They did basically take one and two and mash them together to make Man of Steel. That's kind of what happened here.
Yeah,
that's kind of what happened.
And like we had said, it sets up a lot of hope for the future of the franchise, at least because of the stuff that they either did do well or almost did well. But as you've pointed out, the one big scare factor coming out of it is how many sequels have you seen where they start to tone things down? And man, if you try to amp this one up, there's nowhere to go.
Where are you
going
to go?
No, where can you go?
You said it perfectly earlier. You know, like that's what Metropolis should have looked like after a Doomsday fight.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, because Doomsday is that mindless destruction and Superman trying everything he can to stop him, to stop the destruction and failing.
And dying because he can't stop it.
Yeah, and dying to stop it and all that stuff coming out. But, man, if you try to do Doomsday now, what's the aftermath?
Yeah,
I think you said it best.
Either he's going to have to destroy half the coast,
right?
I don't know how that's going to work, or it's just going to have that feeling of, again?
Not again. Yeah.
The buildings fell.
Don't go big second on the first time. You're shooting yourself.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe the end should have happened in Smallville, where it's like this, it's not, it's still this, you still get this, like, I don't need big destruction to feel like this is big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just you destroying a small town, I'm going to be pretty scared.
Yeah.
But now you're pretty much just like,
there's emotion.
What's
going to
happen in a Justice League movie?
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to make it bigger,
you're making the you've made Earth so small in the first movie.
You've destroyed the biggest city on the planet and almost killed the entire planet.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what comes next?
Yeah. Right. What's next?
Evaporate Australia.
How do you follow that up? You can't. Yeah. Gosh.
All the kangaroos.
Not the kangaroos. Awesome. All right. Well, that pretty much brings us to the end of the Man of Steel discussion. Did you guys have any final things you wanted to throw in there on that?
Oh, I think we threw a lot of
things. Think we got it all in there?
We got a lot.
All right.
There's a lot more, but...
Well, man, I'll tell you what. We've had this conversation. I feel like we've been having this same conversation since the first time we saw the movie.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that we can just keep talking about this and coming up with all these new points about it. So... Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if we can say one thing, it's that Man of Steel has definitely brought out a lot of discussion between us. A lot of things we did like, a lot of things we really didn't like, and we can see potential in this.
Yeah.
We can see real potential in this new DC universe.
It's not the worst thing ever.
At the end of the day, it's still at least a billion times better than The Dark Knight Rises.
That's all I can hope is that.
And now you just angered a whole bunch of more fanboys.
Well, after watching
that's okay,
exactly.
They're terrible at movies.
They will pretty much bend over.
Where it's okay if you guys have an opinion,
especially
unless your opinion is that you like The Dark Knight Rises. Yeah. That's what we're saying.
You're not allowed.
I like it. I said at the very beginning, I like a lot of terrible movies.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fine. You can like it all you want.
No.
You just can't tell me it's good.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
I
well,
agree
I mean,
with
come
that.
On. That's why there's no reason to argue with anybody about this. You're never going to change somebody's mind
about
how they feel about a movie, okay? Don't argue with them and tell them they're dumb just because.
I'm not saying they're dumb.
I'm saying that in general. I see so many people like ready to kill each other over a movie that it cracks me up. Like, look, you guys
We're
obviously have differing
friends.
Opinions here. Like, just let it go, you know?
Well, all my hope is that this does the exact opposite that Batman trilogy did for me. Where I hope this is the bad one, and I get two great ones after it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
Whereas
be
with
awesome.
The Batman trilogy... The Batman Begins, which is in my top five comic book movies. It's just phenomenal, beginning to end, and promised me so much and gave me the exact opposite for the next two movies. I hope Superman does the exact opposite. Because obviously I wasn't very happy with this one, but I hope the next are pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm definitely in the same boat, hoping that I have... And it's kind of scary to say it, but I do have high hopes for the sequel because I want it to.
Clearly.
I want it
to
fix what I don't
like
about this movie.
I want it to be good. And,
I want
it
to. I'm worried. I'm worried about having too high hopes for it though, and then getting crushed again. You know what I mean? Because I was real excited for this movie.
Welcome to liking.
Yeah, I know that's true.
Well, once again, here's what I will back because this is the Marvel thing. Because this is what's great about Marvel. It's like we're doing these movies. Not on a ridiculous budget. We're doing them on a regular action these days budget movie.
And they have to do well enough so we can continue. That's what I want Superman to do, is open the door so I can see all these characters come out. Yep,
absolutely.
That's the point of me wanting to watch this.
And seriously,
I just don't want to see Batman and Superman movies. I want to see so many characters.
If you want to make a great movie, put some restraint in what you'll spend on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
smart.
The WB keeps throwing money after money after money, and it comes up, even when it's pretty good, it's sort of lackluster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just too much, you know? Marvel's like, we can do it, but we're going to do it for about $80
million. Yeah.
We're
going
to be smart
about
this.
We're not going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And they all turn out phenomenal.
Yeah. We'll build.
Yeah.
They know how to build.
When you give people restrictions, creativity breaks through.
Yeah. Right.
You know, if you give people a blank check, then they don't have to bother to stop and think about how silly some of their scenes are.
You mean like how
they just move them forward?
You mean how like Del Toro could make a Hellboy movie for $13 million?
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
and it'd be amazing.
How amazing was Hellboy?
Yeah.
That's
way better than this movie.
Way better.
You know?
Yeah,
he was more human.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, let's go ahead. We got Man of Steel out of the way. I want to shift gears for the last few minutes of the podcast here. Just kind of have some fun at the end of the show. We briefly talked about in the beginning how Ryan worked on the set of Man of Steel. And this isn't the first movie that you've worked on.
No, I work in
It's his business.
Yeah, this is what you do. Like, can you explain like what it is actually that you do?
Well, I started off like anybody else in film working as a production assistant. And I actually worked on the Dark Knight movie up in Chicago, one of the best movies to work on, experiences, and turned out to be a major hit, obviously. And then Superman, Man of Steel was my first movie where I worked as a personal assistant, and God, was it amazing. got to work with wonderful people and one of the best bosses ever. I don't know. It's just, it was really, like I said, I actually got to talk with major players in the movie for the first time.
Right.
I've always been around them.
Right.
But when they find out you're somebody's assistant, they're like, oh yeah, I'll talk to this guy. I won't talk to that other jerk over there with a headset. Who cares about what he says?
Right.
I kind of have to be nice to this kid. But no, everybody was, it was just a fun experience, fun people to be around. Zach, amazing director, amazing fun person on set.
Yeah.
I've never seen somebody so joyful. It's funny because everybody's like, oh, it's Nolan and Snyder doing this. Complete polar opposites as far as like interacting
with
people. Nolan is business all the time. Everything's clockwork. He's very, very in tune. Doesn't like reach out and talk to people, which is fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't have to care about that. But Snyder, get up. Throw the football around, talk with them about stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
He was just a kid on set. Fun guy.
Very cool.
Very, very fun guy.
Very cool. Do you have any, like, fun stories or anything you can talk to us about? Or I know there's
fun
things that you can't.
Stories.
I don't want you to say anything that you can't say.
No,
so we're not going to get
in
trouble.
Nothing's gone. Nothing like that.
Well, I know that you got, like, I'm sure there's. You can divulge everything that you did or who you worked for and everything, right?
Well, I mean, it's common knowledge. It's on the internet. And
oh, well, there you go.
You're in the credits.
So I'm in the credits.
He's
so
in the credits
like
to the movie.
Big deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it was pretty. I really don't know how much more to like emphasize on stuff.
Well,
like,
just,
I didn't work a whole lot on that movie because my boss only shot like 5 days in Chicago. He did most of his work in a different city. But I worked for him on a different movie, and I got to meet more actors and more people. And, it's very,
that's
interesting.
That's the fun thing about I'll get, you know, depending on where he's at on a shoot and what level he's on, I'll just get random texts one day. I'll look down like, hey, Ryan's texting. Oh, that's a picture of him and James Franco. Just chilling, you know.
That's
or like,
awesome.
Or whoever, you know, whoever. Yeah. I was like, randomly, I'll just get like, oh, that's a terribly famous person right next to my friend.
That's really
John's
cool.
Usually my first go-to when anything happens.
Franco?
Anything happens on set, the Franco.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, when he got that, I got that call. And he's like, dude, I just met Schwimmer. And he was awesome.
He was awesome.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
No, that, yeah, because, what, oh, crap. I do kind of have a story. No, calling John all the time. It's funny because even like
even somebody that's like not famous, not big, but somebody I'm working with on a show might be small, but it's something of a connection that we have. Right. I get more excited about those things than the big movie stars that walk in.
Yeah.
So it's cool. Yeah. Those are, and it's always fun because John always gets it. He's
like, oh, I'll be there.
That's fantastic.
That's the first thing, like, dude, I just met Schwimmer. I'm like, well, did you tell him how awesome Kissing a Fool was?
And I did. Yes. We literally talked about that for 20 minutes because he was so happy somebody else knew what the hell that movie was. Because it is amazing. I love it.
That is so cool.
Or how I met the bad guy from License to Kill. That was a great day.
Robert Davi?
Robert Davi. Bobby Davi.
Bobby Davi.
Love that guy.
That is awesome. That's a fun career to have, dude. Make a lot of people jealous, I'm sure.
That guy was in a Die Hard movie, which makes Ryan 1 degree separated from a Die Hard movie.
Whoa. It's true. Whoa.
Amazing. That's close to a Die Hard movie.
Awesome. Well, I think this is a good place to kind of wrap things up. We've been talking for 2.5 hours about Superman and stuff, but hopefully, hopefully you guys stuck it out, and hopefully you don't hate us for for bashing on it too hard, but I did enjoy this. I do like really talking about this kind of stuff, and like I said at the beginning, I know that most of the times I'm very toy and action figure collecting centric, but I mean, we all enjoy this kind of stuff. I love superheroes, and I love comic book movies, and this is what I do when I'm not talking about toys all the time on the internet. I'm hanging out with my friends and doing this kind of stuff. So this kind of gives you a little bit of taste of what I'm doing outside of what you normally see me do. I wanted to thank Ryan and Jonathan both for joining me on this. This was awesome to get and sit here and talk to you guys for 2.5 hours about a movie.
Yeah, I hope you do movies more often.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm sure this won't be the last
Eventually,
one.
Eventually, I hope we disagree about one.
Yeah, I know. We definitely
we think pretty well.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem. We have the same kind of level of thinking when it comes to this, but we definitely do need to have one sometime where there's some disagreement going on so we can get mad at each other. That'd be fun. Jonathan, you have a Twitter account, correct? Did you want to plug that for the listeners?
Sure, I don't get on there too terribly much, but I always mean to increase the traffic. So it's JLeonard31, at JLeonard31.
That's right.
JLEONARD.
So you can go get on Twitter now and make sure you yell at Jonathan because you don't agree with his thoughts on Man of Steel. That's where you can do it. If you guys want to follow me, of course, I'm on Twitter at PixelDan. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/PixelDan. And then, of course, pixel-dan.com. Should make that a daily stop, guys. There's lots of videos on there. New video every single day. Podcasts. Lots of news updates. We got San Diego Comic-Con approaching very quickly. And I will have coverage straight from the event on that. So make sure you stay tuned. Also, this podcast here, we're going to keep trying to do this probably on a bi-weekly schedule. And I'm going to have different guests on with me for every episode, talking about different topics. I will have this up on iTunes as well. So if you prefer to do the iTunes thing, please hit that subscribe button. That way you'll be getting a new episode every time I upload one.
Will they all be 2.5 hours?
Well, I don't know. It depends on what I've all got to say about every topic, I guess. I bet this is going to be one of my longer ones. The first one, then the longest one.
Hopefully the same way with the Superman.
That's right. Hopefully the first one and the longest one. That's right. All right, guys. Well, that's going to wrap up this installment of The Geekeasy. So until next time, I'm Pixel Dan. Take care, guys.
The Geekeasy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. Any animated series discussed are copyright their respective owners. PixelDan.com's The Geekeasy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only.
The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of the Geek Easy Podcast.